keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line. I find it very, very easy to be true. I find myself alone when each day's through. Yes, I'll admit that I'm a fool for you. Because you're mine, I walk the line. As sure as night is dark and day is light, I keep you on my mind both day and night. And happiness I've known proves that it's right. Because you're mine, I walk the line.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A two-month-long strike by oil workers in Norway, the world's third-largest oil exporter, has been answered with a lockout. The Norwegian Shipowners Association announced the lockout on Thursday of last week. And it involves three drilling rigs, one production ship, and eight drilling stations. About 200 members of the Norwegian Federation of Oil Workers Union have been on strike in a labor dispute seeking job security with the Norwegian State Oil Company. Work stoppage caused by the lockout will result in 700 workers laid off and about 30,000 barrels a day lost. The Norwegian government has the power to end the dispute at any time, but has said it is not yet ready to intervene.
During his presidential nomination speech, George Bush briefly outlined his plans to create jobs and improve America's struggling economy. He proposed additional funding for job training programs and making his tax cuts permanent. Secretary of Labor Elaine Chao attended the Republican National Convention.
Well, union membership is declining. Organized labor now comprise about 12.8% of the workforce. Union members comprise only 8.2% of the private sector workforce. So the labor movement has a number of issues that they need to be concerned about.
Chao is part of an administration that opposes the Employee Free Choice Act, which would eliminate many of the barriers to union organizing. She also supported recent cuts to overtime protections and favors allowing states to opt out of any federal minimum wage increase.
360 workers locked out of a titanium plant in Niles, Ohio for more than 10 months have rejected another contract proposal. Workers at the plant, represented by the United Steelworkers of America, were originally locked out when they rejected a proposal by BMI Titanium in October of 2003. At a meeting explaining the vote held in late August, union members said they could not accept the current proposal because it did not afford basic protections the workers need to provide for their families. The five-year contract provided no raises for the workers for the first 3 years.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Progressive Government Institute, Elaine Chao is the most conservative Secretary of Labor of the last half century. Ms. Chao has gone on record against the UN, overtime pay, and ergonomic regulations. She also canceled OSHA health and safety training grants to 19 nonprofit organizations and halted the publication of monthly mass layoff reports. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
My husband went to school part-time. He's got a bachelor's degree in computer science. So far, no job. And it's been 3.5 years. The computer science industry was downsizing, sending jobs overseas. George Bush said Americans need to retrain. My God, how many times do we have to retrain? Why not bring these jobs back home? I voted for George Bush. I feel very betrayed.
MoveOnPack is responsible for the content of this advertisement. Labor Day is all about our country's long striving toward the ideal of egalitarianism, which really is the big idea of America itself. The idea that we might create a society based on the democratic values of economic fairness, social justice, equal opportunity for all. The practical expression of this ideal is in the creation of the middle class, an economic haven from laissez-faire greed, allowing the great majority of workaday folks to pursue happiness without the vicissitudes of oppressive poverty. But a middle-class possibility is not a given in our country, for the forces of greed are constantly pushing to eliminate it. We only have a middle class because our parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents fought, bled, and died to create the framework that allows people to climb up. It's a framework composed of wage and hour laws, minimum wage, Social Security, public education, affordable housing, Medicare, the GI Bill, Head Start, and so many more elements. Yet this is the very framework now being so rapidly and gleefully dismantled by Washington and Wall Street, knocking down millions of working families and cutting off middle-class opportunities for young people. Even though ours is the richest economy in the world, every day in America, 85,444 workers lose their jobs. 14.7 million Americans are jobless, underemployed, or have given up looking for work. 43.6 million are without any health coverage. Every day, 12,878 workers are injured, made ill, or die from their jobs. 6.8 million Americans are at work, but live in poverty because of the low wage of their jobs. This is Jim Hightower saying, America today is in another of those when in the course of human events moments that Jefferson wrote about in 1776. It's time for all of us to fight anew for our middle class framework and to recommit to America's historic egalitarian ideals.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend, Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And happy Labor Day, my friends. 57 days to regime change. The new Zogby poll shows the Bush bounce at 2 points. Interesting, the variations, shall we say, between the various polls. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live from the People's Republic of Vermont, beaming out across America on terrestrial radio stations from coast to coast, down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, and streaming around the planet at radiopower.org, with archives at whiterosesociety.org, and also at tomhartman.com, where you can find the link to our chat room, which is already well occupied. One of the just this remarkable thing, the dynamic of a new paradigm. Our friend Richard Silberstein says a new paradigm, interactive radio. You can talk to me while I talk to you and to the world. Great fun. Anyway, it's Labor Day. The Bush bounce appears to be evaporating quite quickly. Time will tell, of course. But it does take a few days for the average person, I think, to either figure out, by and large, using common sense, things like the assertions that Miller and Bush and so many others made that Democrats, you know, essentially what they implied was that that Democrats hate America or don't want America to defend itself or want us to defend ourselves with spitballs. Or, I mean, this is... And keep in mind, I should qualify this, I am not a Democrat. Okay? I'm not speaking as a Democrat. But this is patent, I guess, is how you, if in this context. Nonsense! It's absolute nonsense. What our chat room loves to call toad poop. Come on, wake up, get a grip. This is not... You know, Kerry voted against a couple of, particularly, I guess, the 1990 omnibus spending defense bill or whatever, because of the way it was funded. It was Defense Secretary Dick Cheney, actually, who was on the attack specifically against all those weapons programs that got recited. You noticed Cheney was not attacking Kerry for that. It was leftist Al Miller. He couldn't do that. Yeah, Susan Estrich, who ran the campaign for Michael Dukakis back in 1988, the Bush family has, I mean, this isn't anything new for the Bush family. It would be really interesting to go back. I doubt there's any records left. I mean, this would be real reporting. This is the kind of thing you'd have to live in New York City. You'd have to go down to the New York Times building. You'd have to dig into the archives and go back to the 1940s, the early 1940s, and find the stories. You may even have to go to a Connecticut newspaper and find the stories of the senatorial campaign of Prescott Bush, who was a United States Senator for at least one term, as I recall. George Herbert Walker Bush's father, George W. Bush's grandfather, and just, you know, see what happened there. Is this something that the Bush family has been doing for three generations or only two? Susan Estrich, 1988, she points out, she wrote this piece that was it's been published in various papers around the country and on a few blogs. She says, "I've been to this movie, Lies Move Numbers." Something the Kerry campaign, when apparently, I mean, the word is that when these so-called Swift Boat ads first came out, Kerry went ballistic and he said, "We need to challenge these things immediately." And Mary Beth Cahill and the others on his staff, his campaign staff, said, "No, come on, people will realize that this is over the top. If we challenge it, we're just giving it credibility. What we really need to do is be above the fray." Well, Kerry saw that happen to Dukakis, you know, another Massachusetts Democrat. And apparently he was not pleased with it. One of his staff members or campaign members came out on the 4th of August against the ads, but he didn't say anything until the 19th. And it's chewing away at him. So Mary Beth Cahill, Susan Estrich here, writes, "Remember the one about Dukakis suffering from depression after he lost the governorship? We lost 6 points over that lie planted by George W.'s close friend and colleague in the 1988 campaign, Lee Atwater. Or how about the one about Kitty Dukakis burning a flag at an anti-war demonstration? Another out-and-out lie, which the Bush campaign denied having anything to do with, except that it turned out to have come from a United States senator via the Republican National Committee. Atwater later apologized to me for that, too, on his deathbed. Did I mention that Lee Atwater's wife is connected to the woman running the Swift Boat campaign?" So Susan Estrich is saying, you know, let's take these people on. Let's take them on head on. And if they want to talk personal, you know, personal weaknesses, how about the 3, 4, or 5 drunken driving arrests that Bush and Cheney have racked up between the two of them, the two most powerful men in the world? Cheney's still drinking. I mean, you've got two alcoholics running the country, apparently. And what happens if Bush falls off the wagon? Do you really believe he choked on a pretzel? I mean, this was a particularly bad week for the president, you will recall, when he choked on that pretzel and passed out watching a football game and smacked his face on the floor. What do we do if our alcoholic president falls off the wagon? How do we handle that? Is it time to ask these kinds of questions in campaign ads? Is it time to take off the gloves? Or does that make us as uncivilized as them? Does that harm, ultimately, the democratic process? Or has the harm already been done? How about a campaign? Kitty Kelly has a book coming out. You know, Kitty Kelly, the tell-all biographer who has infuriated so many of the rich and famous. I think Frank Sinatra was the last. At least the last one I remember. I'm sure she's probably had books since then. Anyhow, she has a book coming out in which she's apparently documenting. She's got an affidavit from the two people who drove this young girl to the abortion clinic back when abortions were illegal. A young girl who had been impregnated by George W. Bush, who paid for her abortion. Should that be an issue in the campaign? Anyhow, this is just the beginning. This is just the beginning. The Kerry folks are either going to do a Dukakis, and they're going to go down in flames, allowing Bush family lies and distortions and half-truths to just stand on the assumption that, well, everybody knows that that's over the top. Or they're going to get in there and fire back. And a lot of us are hoping the latter, even those of us who are not Democrats. Even those of us who have many, many problems with John Kerry still think that he would be a vastly better president than George W. Bush has been or ever could be. But today is Labor Day. Oh, there's one other point I wanted to get to, by the way. Just a small story here. Lieutenant Commander Scott. They're going to get in there and fire back. And a lot of us are hoping the latter, even those of us who are not Democrats. Even those of us who have many, many problems with John Kerry still think that he would be a vastly better president than George W. Bush has been or ever could be. But today is Labor Day. Oh, there's one other point I wanted to get to, by the way. Just a small story here. Lieutenant Commander Scott Zellern. I'm sorry, Zellum. Z-E-L-L-E-M. Lieutenant Commander Scott Zellum. Probably haven't heard his name. There were two planes that flew George W. Bush to the USS Abraham. Scott was the pilot of one of them. Bush, as far as I've been able to tell, Bush was apparently in the other, but he was one of the two pilots who flew with George W. Bush. Bush says I flew the plane, yeah, for 30 seconds. But in any case, he. Anyhow, it's Labor Day. I want to get into the a little bit. I just tell you just a quick story about the history of Labor Day, and what the Bush administration, how the Bush administration has been responding to labor. As Elaine Chao pointed out last week, organized labor now represents about 8% of the private sector workforce, about 12% of the overall workforce in the United States, because most of the public sector workforce, that is people who work for the government, are unionized. And she vigorously opposes legislation that would make it easier for people, or not even make it easier, that would remove barriers to employees trying to form unions within their shops that have been put there, barriers that have been put there largely since the Reagan administration first declared war on organized labor in the United States. Not just on organized labor, on all of us, on anybody who makes under a couple hundred grand a year, or a million a year, let's say. It's probably 100 grand, whatever. The middle class. You know, Bush has only in 34 of his over 1,000 major addresses, news conferences, and public remarks, out of over 1,000, only 34 times has he ever mentioned the phrase middle class. You didn't hear that phrase once at the Republican convention, or at least not from his lips. I didn't hear it from anybody. Could this be an oversight? I don't think so. This White House does nothing by accident. And the same with the Republican Party. There are some issues here, shall we say, with the middle class. 1-866-889-8894, a telephone number if you'd like to call in. 1-866-889-8894. Armin in Sarasota, Florida. Hey, Armin, what's up?
Hey, I was going to ask you, and then I have some comments if you'll give me the time.
We've got a little less than a minute, Armin.
Was that the biggest cult gathering in the history of the United States, that so-called Republican convention?
Well, you could argue the same for the Democrats. I'm not going to go there.
Well, somebody told me, and I don't know if it's true or not, but if you look real close, you can see the barcode is on the delegates.
pull back the back of the collars on their shirts, and there's the barcode.
No, on their forehead.
Yeah, there you go. Good one. Thanks a lot, Armin. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want? That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The last hours of ancient sunlight, the fate of the world, and what we can do before it's too late is Tom Hartman's stunning wake-up call to humanity. Conversations with God author Neil Donald Walsh says this about the book.
Quote it everywhere. Buy 10 books and give them away. Don't let this action go unheard. You may feel like a voice in the wilderness, but it is your voice we're waiting to hear. Yours is the crucial vote. You are the determining factor. We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
A killer murders over 50 prostitutes.
What do we got? Another body!
We reach critical mass when we reach you, and you choose to reach others with the simple message of this book. Let us act at last in the best interest of all. Then the sun will shine another day, and another still, and life will not merely go on, but achieve its highest expression, its grandest glory, its greatest joy. Can we give this gift to our children? Please say yes.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
A killer murders over 50 prostitutes.
What do we got? Another body!
To catch him, you need the help of a killer.
It's a plane ticket. We're going to Florida.
For what?
Ted Bundy.
Tune into A&E tonight at 8 for the original movie, The River Man. The true story of the hunt for the Green River Killer.
I can bring a unique perspective to your hunt for the River Man.
Bruce Greenwood as Detective Kevill and Cary Elwes as Ted Bundy. The River Man. Tonight at 8, 7 Central. Only on A&E.
She's the one. The Chosen.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
For 50 prostitutes.
What do we got? Another body!
To catch him, you need the help of a killer.
It's a plane ticket. We're going to Florida.
For what?
Ted Bundy.
Tune into A&E tonight at 8 for the original movie, The River Man. The true story of the hunt for the Green River Killer.
I can bring a unique perspective to your hunt for the River Man.
Bruce Greenwood as Detective Kevill and Cary Elwes as Ted Bundy. The River Man. Tonight at 8, 7 Central. Only on A&E.
She's the one. The Chosen.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soap.
Plants encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.
Joe Hill, one of labor's great organizers. Back in the 19th century in Salt Lake City.
Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, said he.
Arrested by the police and mysteriously shot while in custody. As I recall, it's been a few years since I read the story of Joe Hill, but yeah, the copper bosses killed you, Joe. Oh, what a great song. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Labor Day, the 6th of September here. 1,099 days since 9/11, 751 days since the anthrax attack that guaranteed the passage of the Patriot Act, 669 days since the search for weapons of mass destruction was declared, 456 days since Joe Wilson's wife was outed, 57 days to regime change. Should we be running ads? Should the Kerry campaign be running ads like like deserters for Bush? You know?
I did not serve with George Bush. I did not serve with George Bush. I know George Bush is lying about his service because I was skiing with him in Aspen the whole time.
His account of where he was and where he wasn't are as different as being at a frat party and being in the military.
Literally.
George Bush cannot be trusted to be there for America, especially if there is anywhere near an Air Force base.
We got so drunk.
George Bush is a deserter.
Yeah, but he's not an honorable one.
One time he bought all of us 5 lap dances each. I think this was the third time we were able to go.
He lacks the capacity to lead the country. He did lead us once on a streak through the Quad, though.
You should have seen some of those strippers.
When the chips are down, you could always count on George Bush to pick up more, along with a new keg.
George Bush talks about doing his duty. But does he ever talk about the time that he lit his duty on fire and threw it at the drill sergeant's house?
He dishonored his fellow deserters. He most certainly did.
George Bush has betrayed the men and women who didn't serve with him. I am proud to be a deserter.
The fact is, he was the greatest deserter I ever saw. Excuses, family connections, drugs. He had it all. George Bush was more than willing to put himself in harm's way every time he got behind the wheel.
Most of us went all the way to Canada. George Bush shirked his duties right here in America, and now he's denying it.
Deserters for Truth. Is this appropriate? 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Jim in Atlanta's on the line. Hey, Jim, happy Labor Day.
Well, good afternoon, Tom. I'd like to bring up about 3 things. When we bring up Lee Atwater, we think about Karl Rove.
Yeah.
But
who was his
mentor? There was another hero of Lee Atwater, and that was George Bush.
Right.
I'd like for you to talk about at least 2 things today. One, about the 17.5% rise in Medicare.
Yeah.
And also about the article that you wrote about fascism. I appreciate you, Tom. God bless Tom Hartman. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate the call. The piece you're referring to about fascism is called The Ghost of Henry Wallace. If you go to TomHartman.com and click Articles on Democracy, you'll find it there. And it was the Vice President of the United States under Roosevelt, Roosevelt's second Vice President, Henry A. Wallace, who was warning us about the rise of fascism in the United States.
There was another hero of Lee Atwater, and that was George Bush.
Right.
I'd like for you to talk about at least 2 things today. One, about the 17.5% rise in Medicare.
Yeah.
And also about the article that you wrote about fascism. I appreciate you, Tom. God bless Tom Hartman. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate the call. The piece you're referring to about fascism is called The Ghost of Henry Wallace. If you go to TomHartman.com and click Articles on Democracy, you'll find it there. And it was the Vice President of the United States under Roosevelt, Roosevelt's second Vice President, Henry A. Wallace, who was warning us about the rise of fascism in the United States that would take the form of an attempted corporate takeover of our government.
Sure.
Yeah.
And also about the article that you wrote about fascism. I appreciate you, Tom. God bless Tom Hartman. Thanks.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate the call. The piece you're referring to about fascism is called The Ghost of Henry Wallace. If you go to TomHartman.com and click Articles on Democracy, you'll find it there. And it was the Vice President of the United States under Roosevelt, Roosevelt's second Vice President, Henry A. Wallace, who was warning us about the rise of fascism in the United States that would take the form of an attempted corporate takeover of our government. And it's all right there in black and white. It's basically a summary of a letter that Henry Wallace wrote to the New York Times, that was published in the New York Times in, as I recall, 42. Although I may be wrong. The piece you're referring to about fascism is called The Ghost of Henry Wallace. If you go to TomHartman.com and click Articles on Democracy, you'll find it there. And it was the Vice President of the United States under Roosevelt, Roosevelt's second Vice President, Henry A. Wallace, who was warning us about the rise of fascism in the United States that would take the form of an attempted corporate takeover of our government. And it's all right there in black and white. It's basically a summary of a letter that Henry Wallace wrote to the New York Times, that was published in the New York Times in, as I recall, 42. Although I may be wrong, might have been a little earlier than that, but right around that time. And yes, Jim, you're absolutely right. Medicare premiums, on Thursday, George Bush says, oh, we're going to look out for the seniors. And on Friday, Medicare premiums go up 17.5%. Biggest increase in the history of the program.
I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
On Wednesday, one Labor Day event overshadowed all others in the media when
they had no right to close those firehouses. We're doing more with less every day.
Despite repeated phone calls, the UFA declined to comment.
A 10-year lawsuit over the closing of a McDonnell Douglas plant in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Come all you good workers, good news to you, I'll tell of how the good old union has come in here to dwell.
Oh, which side are you going to be on?
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
It's Labor Day.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 27 minutes before the hour.
Come all you good workers, good news to you, I'll tell of how the good old union has come in here to dwell.
Oh, which side are you going to be on?
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
It's Labor Day.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 27 minutes before the hour. Coming up on 26 minutes before the hour, actually. George Bush mentioned the middle class only 34 times. Hasn't mentioned, as somebody in the chat room pointed out, hasn't mentioned, you know, to say lower class sounds kind of like you're dissing people. Hasn't mentioned the poor, the working poor. The economically, the class below the middle class. To the best of my knowledge at all. Although, you know, when he speaks to a group of rich folks, here's the haves, modest houses for the workers. little fancier Victorian-style houses for the managers, and an incredibly fancy motel or hotel, the top floor of which Pullman himself lived in and where he entertained guests and visitors and business people. And for about a decade, everything worked pretty smoothly. Everybody in the town worked for Pullman, making cars. Their rent was automatically deducted from their paychecks. This is sort of like, you know, well, there's been a couple of movies about this kind of a dystopia, you know, the Stepford Wives. And anyhow, imperfect analogies. But then in 1893, we hit a rough spot economically. There was actually it was referred to as the Depression of 1893. Today we might call it a severe recession. And so Pullman cut the wages of his workers, but he didn't cut the rent that he was charging them to live in the houses that he had built for them. And they didn't take kindly to that, shall we say. They walked out. And the American Railway Union, which was headed by a young guy by the name of Eugene V. Debs, D-E-B-S, who later on would run for president as a socialist from a jail cell. Eugene Debs led a boycott of any train that had a Pullman car on it. And this was nationwide. And Grover Cleveland was president. He declared the strike a federal crime. He pulled out 12,000 troops to break the strike. Two people were killed when the troops fired upon them. Lots more were injured. This is in Kensington near Chicago. And 2 years later, August 3rd, 1894, a year later, the strike was declared over. Debs went to prison. And the employees of the Pullman Railroad Car Company, in order to keep living in their little dystopian town, Pullman, Illinois, and to keep their jobs, had to sign an agreement saying they would never again join a union or try to participate in unionization. Well, this didn't look good for Grover Cleveland. And 1894 was an election year. So he decided, and 2 years earlier, in September of 1892, in New York City, unionized workers, there were a lot of garment workers actually then in New York, actually were right up through the 50s. Many of them took an unauthorized day off and had a march around Union Square and demanded that day be a holiday. This was in early September. I don't have the exact date here. And so Cleveland thought, well, that's an idea. It had happened 2 years earlier. So in 1894, he declared Labor Day. And Samuel Gompers, who was the head of the American Federation of Labor, 4 years later, said, Labor Day is the day for which the toilers in past centuries looked forward when their rights and their wrongs would be discussed, that the workers of our day may not only lay down their tools of labor for a holiday, but upon which they may touch shoulders in marching phalanx and feel the stronger for it. In other words, let's discuss what happened with labor here in the United States. Well, over the last three decades, the real median wage has dropped 8%. Instead of the median income in America being $43,300 right now, since Ronald Reagan came into power, people's wages had tracked their productivity, which they had, by the way, through the golden age of the American middle class, the 1930s through the late 1970s, early 1980s. If they had continued to, the average American, the median American family right now would be making $60,000 a year instead of $43,300. What ifs? Anyhow, let's go back to the phone lines here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Matt in Grand Rapids, Michigan, has been patiently on the line. Hey, Matt, thanks for waiting. What's up?
No problem, Tom. Just got done working on my Labor Day without time and a half. Thank you very much.
Oh, my.
I just need to vent. It's the stuff that's gone on the last week, this whole business with the polls. Can you explain to me how in the world Kerry can go from, well, virtually ahead to an 11-point deficit in a day and a half?
When there's supposedly only 4% swing voters. What I thought was interesting was the Zogby poll. If you can Google it, you can find it fairly easily. The two big polls that are quoted, of course, are the CNN poll and the Newsweek poll or whatever. They're two of the huge media corporations that also have many other interests. And traditionally do very well under Republican administrations. And they're showing this, you know, 10, 11, 12-point bounce. The Zogby poll is showing a 2-point bounce. And the Zogby poll is the one that's done by a guy who's a professional pollster, and he's independent of anybody. And I'm wondering, you know, just how solid these polls might be. But beyond and you know the you know there are folks who are who call the program regularly and are of a little more conspiracy theory bent than I am, who would say, well, you know, this is the setup. This is the big corporations getting ready, and they're going to rig the voting machines, and then they'll say, see, it wasn't the voting machines; it was really the people. And you know, I'm damn near a point where I would say it may well be, particularly when you see these disparities with the Zogby poll. It's just like the big disparities in Georgia when Max Cleland so-called lost, yet all the polls showed him winning. You know, so
Tom, do you think that – I have two other comments, if I may, quickly.
Sure.
One being that, do you think that we've reached the point now, as we've gone through the 80s and the 90s and Reaganomics have taken hold, that I was looking at some more poll numbers this morning, I think on CNN, and – these polls they were giving showed Bush, more people trusted Bush with the economy, more people trusted Bush with the environment, and I'm just thinking, are these people just to the point where they're going to settle for working two jobs, working 70 hours a week, you know, working in crappy conditions? Are we reached the point where we're just willing to settle for that and say, okay, Bush is the guy? I don't understand how people can be just so apathetic and complacent with how bad things have gotten. Have we forgotten?
Yeah, well, the reality is that many of us have forgotten. You know, we've had 10, 15 years of right-wing talk radio pushing down our throats lies, distortions, and misconceptions, number one. You've had political parties, you know, you've got largely the Republican Party, but the Democrats as well, certainly since the election of Ronald Reagan, promoting conservative economics and the idea that, you know, there should be a certain level of unemployment. And the I mean, our minimum wage right now, $5.15 an hour, is enough at that minimum wage right now? An average person, you would earn less than $12,000 a year. That's below the poverty line.
Yeah.
I mean, that should not be a minimum. We are saying as a society that our minimum wage is going to be poverty. That we want the bottom line to be poverty. And you know, I'll tell you, somebody working in a restaurant, even washing dishes, I mean, whatever it may be, working in a factory, these are not, it may not require a college education, but it doesn't mean that people doing them are stupid, and it doesn't mean that they have any less value as human beings.
Those are some of the jobs that people with master's and bachelor's degree are vying for now here in Michigan.
Yeah.
I mean, it's come to that. It really has.
Yeah, I know. I believe it was the Marriott hotel chain. I may be wrong, but one of the big hotel chains about 5 years ago ran an advertising campaign in which they were bragging about the fact that more than a third of their bellboys had bachelor's degrees, were college graduates. And they ran the ads for a few weeks, you know, and they were trying to project the image of an upscale, successful hotel. But the obvious sub-message got through, and they decided, well, that wasn't such a good thing, so they pulled it.
One other quick thing, Tom, if I may. Do you think if we get a scenario similar to what it was 4 years ago, or maybe even not exactly similar, but, you know, close circumstances, do you think the people, there's going to be a major civil unrest, irregardless of the winner of the election? Because, seriously, I'm at the point, if Bush takes another 4 years, I am terrified of what's going to happen to my future and my job and issues. I mean, it's just, I mean, here I'm thinking Canada, oh, you know, it's only 150 miles away. Do you think the whole country or at least the losing party, I know the Democrats here in Grand Rapids are outnumbered, obviously, because it's conservative West Michigan here, but I think these people are on the verge of just, if they have to do another 4 years of Bush, they're just going to lose it.
Yeah,
even
the most conservative parts of the country, still you'll have, you know, a third, 30%, 40% of the people there are still, you know, Democrats or democratically leaning. It's, you know, it's outnumbered is vastly exaggerated. I mean, keep in mind, Al Gore got more votes in the last presidential campaign than any candidate in the history of the American presidency. And that, you know, it happened all over the country. But in
conservative West Michigan here, but I think these people are on the verge of just, if they have to do another 4 years of Bush, they're just going to lose it.
Yeah,
even
the most conservative parts of the country, still you'll have, you know, a third, 30%, 40% of the people there are still, you know, Democrats or democratically leaning. It's, you know, it's outnumbered is vastly exaggerated. I mean, keep in mind, Al Gore got more votes in the last presidential campaign than any candidate in the history of the American presidency. And that, you know, it happened all over the country. But in answer to your question, no, I don't think that there'll be civil unrest. I think that television has acted as Aldous Huxley's soma. It has pacified us. And I don't think that there's going to be mass exodus to Canada. And if Bush is reelected or is elected he, for the first time, frankly, I don't want to say it's going to be a good thing. Certainly, I think it would be a disaster. But keep in mind, there were a lot of us who were very histrionic or hysterical or concerned or whatever when it looked like Nixon was going to get real. Some good independent investigations, or ideally, if the Democrats can take one of the two houses of Congress, the House of Representatives or the Senate, serious, real, Sam Irvin-type investigations, and there's no way that this administration could withstand them. No way. They've got so many things that, the Cheney energy stuff, the Supreme Court ruled against Cheney, but they said, but you don't have to release the information until after the election. The Valerie Plame being outed, looks like it's not going to come out until after the election. This is just the big stuff.
I was going to say, house of cards, Tom.
It really is.
I was thinking about that the other day.
It really is.
There's so much these people have, and it's just if, God forbid they manage to get another 4 years, I think it's all going to come tumbling down in a serious way.
Yeah, and the tragedy the tragedy is that America may come tumbling down with it. That's the downside. The upside is that it may be a very useful catharsis for America. It may teach a new generation, that doesn't remember Nixon, that doesn't remember Hoover, certainly. I mean, there's very few people left who remember Hoover. Teach a new generation what the cons are really all about, and set up an opportunity for America to actually become more democratic and to move forward and become more progressive. Matt, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you.
Keep up the great work. Really appreciate it.
I'll do it.
Thank you.
And you too. Spread the word, Matt. Tag your it is the bottom line here. 1-866-889-8894. Alice in Old Joe, Arkansas on the line. Hey, Alice, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Nice to talk to you. I've been following you ever since I found your essay called The Lost People.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful essay.
Jeez, I wrote that years ago. Yeah. Well, thank you.
Well, the reason I'm calling is I read last night on the website The Age, which I believe comes out of Australia.
Yes, it's one of the major Australian newspapers, actually.
Right. The Pentagon has ordered an investigation into the awarding of John Kerry's 5 Vietnam War decorations.
Yes, at the request
Judicial Watch.
That's right, or under a potential lawsuit from Larry Klayman's old organization. Larry's now running for the Senate. He claims he doesn't have anything to do with them anymore. But
Yeah, and apparently they're saying that the former Navy Secretary John Leeman,
mm-hmm.
whose signature was on a citation
right.
that says, quote, by his brave actions, bold initiative, and unwavering devotion to duty, Lieutenant Kerry reflected great credit on himself.
Yeah, and Leeman is now saying, I don't remember
I never
that.
Saw it, I never yep. signed it, I never approved
yep.
it.
Well,
and Mr. Fitton, who is from Judicial Watch, says, we hope this is the beginning of an actual investigation into the legitimacy of Senator Kerry's awards by the Navy and the Pentagon.
Yeah.
Into the legitimacy. Oh, well, let's see. 35 years ago, they were legit. They aren't today.
Well, they're just doing everything they can to keep this thing spinning because they can't. They don't want us talking about the economy. They don't want us talking about the state of organized labor. They don't want us talking about the fact that people are dying right now because of the economic and health policies and the politics of this
administration. Or the seven Marines that died today.
Exactly. Not to mention what's going on in Iraq and Afghanistan. We're actually losing control of cities in Iraq. We've lost control of more than 80% of the country of Afghanistan. Yes, there's 10 million people registered to vote because the warlords are out there getting people to vote, registered to vote. You must register to vote in Afghanistan because I, the warlord who controls this particular opium crop, I want to be in control. we're going to legitimize the opium barons, and it's just and they don't want anybody talking about that stuff.
So we can have the Pentagon, which should be doing something for the people who are dying in Iraq, investigating Kerry's awards.
Right. If we can keep it, if they can keep the attention on things like John Kerry's war service, or any kind of personal, any personal dirt that they'll be able to dig up, or things like prayer in schools, or in the Constitution, or blah de blah de blah. Wedge issues. As Newt Gingrich told Republicans about 3 weeks ago, we need to focus on wedge issues, and the reason is obvious. Alice, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you.
Tom.
Got to move along. 10 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman radio program. Stick around. We'll be right back.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. what happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug. The phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level. And you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
When human rights groups discover that our third world sweatshops employ a lot of child labor, they're always horrified. These children should be in school, they stridently insist. But why would these kids be better off sitting at a desk learning about social studies than working on our assembly lines? Schools are supposed to prepare you for the future. In most of the places we do business, the only future these moppets have is on an assembly line. What better way for them to prepare than in our sweatshop apprentice program? The kids get paid a special introductory wage while they learn all the skills they'll need for the rest of their short, miserable lives. And those little hands can do some really intricate stitching, believe me. This has been Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
Hi, this is Tom Hartmann. It's been said that if you scratch the surface of any issue of social or economic injustice, you'll find the issue of corporate power and corporate personhood. Join me for the facts on September 24th. I'll be speaking in Portland, Oregon at the Unitarian Church on Main Street at 7 p.m. For more information, call Marcia at 503-665-3957. That's 503-665-3957.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
A study of colonial farmers in New England reveals some careful stewards of the land. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The conventional wisdom concerning early American farmers has long been that they were hard on the land. Brian Donahue has looked into the question in his new book, The Great Meadow. Donahue says historians have held two theories about what drove people to clear the forests and exhaust the soil in New England. One has it that the sheer abundance of land prompted settlers to use up one parcel and move on to the next. Donahue is an environmental historian at Brandeis University. He says a second theory focuses on markets. It holds that early American farmers seized an opportunity to make big profits, and they turned the land and other natural resources into commodities to sell. But neither explanation stands up to Donahue's investigation. He researched tax rolls, probate records, and other information on land ownership and productivity around Concord, Massachusetts during the 17th and 18th centuries. His conclusion? Early American farmers practiced what we'd now call sustainable agriculture. Donahue found the same families farming the same pieces of land for generation after generation, and he could find no evidence that they were degrading it. What he found instead was that they had carefully and intelligently adapted the mixed husbandry they brought from England to the New England landscape. They raised livestock and collected manure to use as fertilizer. They managed woodlots and hay meadows for long-term productivity. It was a system that had worked well for hundreds of years in England, and Donahue says the colonial farmers made it work for many generations after coming to America. He says damage to the land occurred much later, when market forces overwhelmed this community-oriented system of farming. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's coming through a hole in the air.
It being democracy. Democracy is coming to the United States of America, says Leonard Cohen, who ironically is Canadian. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Bill in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Bill, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
Great.
First of all, I'm looking forward to the visit later on today in Kalamazoo, our next vice president. That's something I'm looking forward to.
John Edwards.
And, yeah, John Edwards coming to Kalamazoo this evening at Branson Park.
Yep. In fact, one of the folks, Mom Liberated, in our chat room says she was going to go hear John Edwards speak today, but her youngest daughter is too sick. She has to stay home. But
well, as a precinct captain in the Wyoming area, I'm more or less obligated to go. It's my pleasure anyway. And second of all, I hear about you every day. My wife listens to you around the noon hour, and this is the first time I had a chance to call. I hear good things about you every day, and I'm looking forward to your visit on the 17th.
Great, I am too.
But, also emulating your last caller, Matt, I believe it was, that I'm kind of scared too, just in case things don't go the way we have planned up here, that I'm a little concerned being in the automotive supply business, that I've noticed a change in the last 4 years on what I'm doing now versus what I've done in the previous administration.
That being?
It's very bothersome to me, both financially and physically.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm working more hours, going between a couple of different plants to financially compensate our family situation versus what we had to do 4 years ago.
Well, what you're describing, Bill, is the result of the basically the surrender of sovereignty of the United States to transnational corporations. And this is not something that we can entirely lay at the feet of George W. Bush. George W. Bush has wholeheartedly, and the Republican Party, have wholeheartedly embraced it. But so did Bill Clinton. He signed WTO and NAFTA, which, you know, basically made it into law that transnational corporations have the authority and the power to say to sovereign nations like the United States, you cannot do certain things with regard to your trade policy. And, you know, I suppose the good news is that Bush, when he first came into office, he showed us, he demonstrated that we can walk away from treaties, we can ignore them. But he's not going to choose to walk away from this one. John Kerry might, who knows? I mean, you know, Kerry so far seems to be like he's, you know, pro-NAFTA and GATT, but although he wants changes. The change I want is to get rid of the whole thing, and let's go back to the system we had before Ronald Reagan that served this nation well from 1787 to 1980, where we had specific trade tariffs and said, you know, there are some industries that we really think we should keep in the United States because we want to keep these jobs here, because they have to do with our national security, because they have to do with our economic security. And, you know, so that's Bill, your...
Well, I hope everything shakes out the way we had planned here, and a better future for all, and the good workers that deserve it every day.
I agree. Thanks a lot, Bill. Great to hear from you. Happy Labor Day. And just in final, you know, the key is to work at the local level. That's really where it happens.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a 4-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A two-month-long strike by oil workers in Norway, the world's third-largest oil exporter, has been answered with a lockout. The Norwegian Shipowners Association announced the lockout on Thursday of last week. The Norwegian Shipowners Association announced the lockout on Thursday of last week, and it involves 3 drilling rigs, 1 production ship, and 8 drilling stations. About 200 members of the Norwegian Federation of Oil Workers Union have been on strike in a labor dispute seeking job security with the Norwegian State Oil Company. Work stoppage caused by the lockout will result in 700 workers laid off and about 30,000 barrels a day lost. The Norwegian government has the power to end the dispute at any time, but has said it is not yet ready to intervene.
During his presidential nomination speech, George Bush briefly outlined his plans to create jobs and improve America's struggling economy. He proposed additional funding for job training programs and making his tax cuts permanent. Secretary of Labor Elaine Chao attended the Republican National Convention.
Well, union membership is declining. Organized labor now comprise about 12.8% of the workforce. Union members comprise only 8.2% of the private sector workforce. So the labor movement has a number of issues that they need to be concerned about.
Chao is part of an administration that opposes the Employee Free Choice Act, which would eliminate many of the barriers to union organizing. She also supported recent cuts to overtime protections and favors allowing states to opt out of any federal minimum wage increase.
360 workers locked out of a titanium plant in Niles, Ohio for more than 10 months have rejected another contract proposal. Workers at the plant, represented by the United Steelworkers of America, were originally locked out when they rejected a proposal by BMI Titanium in October of 2003. At a meeting explaining the vote held in late August, union members said they could not accept the current proposal because it did not afford basic protections the workers need to provide for their families. The 5-year contract provided no raises for the workers for the first 3 years.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Progressive Government Institute, Elaine Chao is the most conservative Secretary of Labor of the last half century. Ms. Chao has gone on record against the UN, overtime pay, and ergonomic regulations. She also canceled OSHA health and safety training grants to 19 nonprofit organizations and halted the publication of monthly mass layoff reports. You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
My husband went to school part-time. He's got a bachelor's degree in computer science. So far, no job. And it's been 3.5 years. The computer science industry was downsizing, sending jobs overseas. George Bush said Americans need to retrain. My God, how many times do we have to retrain? Why not bring these jobs back home? I voted for George Bush. I feel very betrayed.
Move On Pack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Labor Day is all about our country's long striving toward the ideal of egalitarianism, which really is the big idea of America itself. The idea that we might create a society based on the democratic values of economic fairness, social justice, equal opportunity for all. The practical expression of this ideal is in the creation of the middle class, an economic haven from laissez-faire greed, allowing the great majority of workaday folks to pursue happiness without the vicissitudes of oppressive poverty. But a middle-class possibility is not a given in our country, for the forces of greed are constantly pushing to eliminate it. We only have a middle class because our parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents fought, bled, and died to create the framework that allows people to climb up. It's a framework composed of wage and hour laws, minimum wage, Social Security, public education, affordable housing, Medicare, the GI Bill, Head Start, and so many more elements. Yet this is the very framework now being so rapidly and gleefully dismantled by Washington and Wall Street, knocking down millions of working families and cutting off middle-class opportunities for young people. Even though ours is the richest economy in the world, every day in America, 85,444 workers lose their jobs. 14.7 million Americans are jobless, underemployed, or have given up looking for work. 43.6 million are without any health coverage. Every day, 12,878 workers are injured, made ill, or die from their jobs. 6.8 million Americans are at work, but live in poverty because of the low wage of their jobs. This is Jim Hightower saying, America today is in another of those when in the course of human events moments that Jefferson wrote about in 1776. It's time for all of us to fight anew for our middle class framework and to recommit to America's historic egalitarian ideals.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend, Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends, to the second hour of our program on Labor Day, the 6th of September, 2004. How many Labor Days would that be since 1884 when Labor Day first started? That would be, what, 120 of them? If I'm doing my math right, seems like it should be. And now we have a situation where tens of thousands of workers, as Mark Weisbrot at Notes on Alternate, tens of thousands of workers are illegally fired each year for organizing or attempting to join a union. We have union membership that is down into levels that it was in the 1920s before the passage of the Wagner Act. And the reason why? Institutional reasons, because that is to say, the law. It has become now very, very difficult to join a union or to bring about a union representation in your place of work, and this is tracks directly back to 1980 when Ronald Reagan declared war on the ability of workers to organize. He said, it's fine if capital wants to organize. It's fine if businesses want to organize. They can organize into trade associations. They can even buy each other and form conglomerates. In fact, he stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act, which was designed to prevent corporations from getting so large that they would squash small competitors and entrepreneurs. And we had this, remember the 80s, the era of mergers and acquisitions, M&A, Michael Milken, greed is good, companies getting bigger and bigger. I mean, Jimmy Carter was the last president to enforce the Sherman Act when he broke up AT&T in the late 1970s. It hasn't been used since then for all practical purposes. And so we've had every president since Ronald Reagan, has said basically to corporations, it's fine if you want to get bigger and bigger. You want to organize? That's fine. Trade associations, chambers of commerce, combine, you know, half a dozen different businesses into one corporation, organize capital. That's cool. But if human beings, if workers, if employees, if they want to organize, here's a series of hoops y'all are going to have to jump through. And the hoops have gotten higher and bigger and smaller, or whatever the metaphor is. And as a result now, Human Rights Watch, which normally looks outside the United States instead of inside the United States, has said that the United States has, this is a quote, a culture of near impunity for employers who violate basic labor rights. Now, see, that operates on the assumption that there is such a right as the basic right for labor to organize. And the conservatives would argue that there is no such right. It's not in the Constitution. It doesn't exist. Well, first of all, there's a fundamental error in that, because the Constitution doesn't grant us rights. The Constitution limits the powers of government. You say, well, what about the Bill of Rights? Well, you know, Jefferson demanded that the Bill of Rights be put in. He says, you know, in case future generations forgot that the whole point of the Constitution was limiting the power of government, and that we have a government of, by, and for we the people, that only the people hold the rights in the United States. But the Constitution does not grant us rights. The Constitution limits the, because we hold all the rights. The government does not have rights. It has privileges. And it, up until recently, relatively recently in the history of the United States, corporations didn't have rights. They only had privileges. And even today, unions have no rights. They only have privileges. Churches have no rights. They only have privileges. Nonprofits have no rights. They only have privileges. Only human beings have rights, and now under this interpretation, some bizarre interpretations of Supreme Court rulings, corporations have some human rights. Go figure. And the result of this has been the companies can basically say to individuals who want to unionize, who want to organize, well, okay, we'll let you do that, but here's what you've got to go through to get there. And the go through to get there has, we had almost half of the nation unionized in the 1950s. And guess what? We had a huge middle class, largest middle class in the history of the nation. We're down now to 8%, a little more than 8% of the private workforce, 12% of the total workforce in the United States unionized. And the middle class is evaporating, and the class of the working poor is exploding. And in the midst of this, the rich are getting richer. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to call in on this Labor Day. We've got a lot of news to share with you, a lot of stories here to get through, but also a few folks who've been patiently waiting on the telephone. Let's take a few of these calls. Rich in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Rich, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. I wanted to call in and cheer Matt up from Grand Rapids here and let him know he's not the only Democrat around. And, well, and I, too, will be going to see John Edwards at 6:30 tonight.
Great.
Down in Kalamazoo, and I invite everybody in who can hear us right now to hop in the car and come on down and join us.
Yeah, well, we're on two stations there in Michigan, WTKG in Grand Rapids, WSDS in Ann Arbor, stretches all the way to western Detroit. And hopefully, and both of those are driving distance to Kalamazoo.
Exactly. If you're here in Grand Rapids, you're under an hour, and from Ann Arbor, that part takes you like an hour and a half. And it's interesting, Labor Day started in 1884, and we've got an administration which would love nothing more than to see the labor laws restored to where they were in 1884, and it seems like they're working darn hard to get there.
Yeah, and they are. They are. And they're open about it. And what's really, frankly, mind-boggling to those of us who are old enough to have some sense of history, you know, of just recent history. I mean, I remember the 50s vaguely. I remember the 60s certainly very well. Is how radical a change there has been in the United States in with regard to laws that protect, that define the rules of the game of business, and to protect the rights and interests of we the people, particularly we the people who work for a living, today versus before Ronald Reagan, before Reagan declared war on labor. It's night and day. And there's, you know, probably half the voting population is too young to remember it.
Well, yeah, people died for the right to organize in this country.
Oh, yeah. Many
of them. I'm not making this up. You go back to the 1930s and the auto workers in Flint and in Detroit. I mean, and before that, people that worked for the steel companies in Pittsburgh, they died to organize. And then people today are just like, you know, no big deal. You know, they just don't seem to think about it. But the reason I called actually is two things. The lady that called in and was talking about the investigation being opened into John Kerry's medals.
Yeah, that was Allison in Arkansas.
Yeah, there was an article which appeared in The Guardian last Friday saying that Bush was transferred from his Texas Air National Guard unit to Alabama because he was drunk all the time and it was an embarrassment to his father. And I haven't seen that picked up anywhere. But if you want to read the piece, you go to one of my favorite websites, democraticunderground.com. That's one word, Democratic Underground.
Yeah.
They run a weekly feature called Top 10 Conservative Idiots, which is always a scream. And there's a link to that article in that piece, the Top 10 Conservative Idiots. And the other thing I think people should see is go to Comedy Central. They ran a mock Bush campaign ad last week called What He Says. And or rather, it's called Because He Says So.
Yeah, I saw that.
Wasn't it great?
Yeah, it really
is. It's his own words. You know, it's just Bush talking, basically, and it just lays all the contradictions and all the lies out there for people, and it's humorous in doing so.
Yeah, all the Bushisms. Yeah. There's a lot out there for folks to find. You know, BuzzFlash.com, mm-hmm. CommonDreams.org, OpEdNews.com. There's some great websites out there that have an enormous depth and breadth of information. The tragedy is that Clinton, Reagan, Bush Sr., allowed largely Reagan. I mean, you know, he was the one who kicked the doors open and allowed these huge media combines, in particular the what are now the three networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, to end up being owned by companies that aren't even in the business of broadcasting. And then you had the news divisions being spun into entertainment and on it went to the point where news, which really should be something sacred in a democracy, mm-hmm. and media, newspapers, very few communities have a local newspaper any longer, these things are essential to democracy. A free and independent media is essential to democracy, and a media that is controlled by a huge multinational corporation like General Electric is not, for example, NBC in that case, is not, in my opinion, a free and independent media.
And just look at your own situation. You are one of about two liberal voices that's available to me as a consumer on the radio, as opposed to 98% of the conservative junk that's out there.
Yeah, although I have to say, I may be wrong on this, and time will tell, but I suspect that the next year is going to prove me right. Because I used to work in radio. I mean, I started in radio in the 60s as a DJ, and then I did news. I was a program director for a while. And there's a real herd mentality in radio. In fact, I one of my first gigs at WVIC in Lansing was doing Drake format, top 40 in the program.
Sure.
Number 12 on the top 20, Steppenwolf, that.
It's funny, Tom, because I'm working for the company that now owns that very radio station.
Oh, really?
I fill in from time to time and what have you.
Well, I could tell you stories, but
exactly. Right, but I was talking to the current program director. Happen to have a free frequency right now.
Uh huh.
And I said, "Well, why don't you pick up Tom Hartman?
Oh, that's interesting.
Why don't you pick up Air America?
Yeah.
I mean, you'd be addressing the audience.
They'd have to make a choice. But here's the point that I was going to make, Rich, and that is that you've got Air America out there that's picking up stations left and right, and they're doing very well in the markets that they're mm-hmm. going into, and they're doing very well with some very good programming and some, in my opinion, very mediocre programming.
Mm-hmm.
And even their mediocre programming is doing well, and that tells me that there's a huge demand out there for so-called liberal programming.
Well, of course there is.
This program is growing. Ed Schultz is growing. I'm seeing right now the emergence of basically a second, not a network, competing with Air America, but basically a whole day. You know, somebody could put on Doug Steffen in the morning, and I guess Stephanie Miller's coming on from 9 to noon, and then me mm-hmm. from noon to 3, and then Ed Schultz 3 to 6, and then Peter B. Collins up to 9 p.m., and then Alan Combs 9 to midnight. And there you got a whole day of programming that's not Air America. So there's like two levels of liberal talk radio that are starting to reach the marketplace,
well,
and there are
Alan
stations
Combs
that are doing this.
Because I think I can kick his butt.
Well, see, but right now he's the best that there is in the 9 to midnight slot. I mean, somebody else will come along. That's my point. If there's room in major markets for five different levels of conservative talk radio, just like in the noon to 3 slot, you got Rush, then you got Bill O'Reilly, and you got Dennis Prager, and then you got blah-de-blah-de-blah. There's certainly room for two or three or four levels of liberal talk radio, and that, in my opinion, is where the biggest expansion, the biggest explosion in growth is going to be over the next few years. And
I hope you're right.
And well, it's happening. I'm seeing it happen. I'm telling you, it's happening.
Well,
and
it's supposed to happen because the market is there. I mean, your job is
exactly,
program director
and that's
is
the
to
thing.
Get a rating.
And that's the thing. See, I think for the last 10 years or so, people in the radio business have just been doing this herd mentality thing.
Yeah.
As I said, when I started out with the Drake format, it was like it was the big new thing. Everybody, everybody do what's already been done. Nobody wants to take chances. Nobody wants to take risks. I really, salute, for example, the folks at WTKG, Phil Tower and the folks there who put this program on the air mm-hmm. and took a chance, and WS in Michigan and all of our other affiliates all across
sure.
the country. It's working and growing. So I'm not despairing you know, either about the future of radio or about the future of politics. I, you know, regardless of who wins this election, the trends, in my opinion, are very clear. The right is collapsing. They're crashing and burning, and they're taking parts of America down with them. And people are waking up, and I see change coming. Rich, thanks for the call. We got to move along. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Len. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
A killer murders over 50 prostitutes.
What do we got?
Another body!
To catch him, you need the help of a killer.
It's a plane ticket. We're going to Florida.
For what?
Ted Bundy.
Tune into A&E tonight at 8 for the original movie, The River Man. The true story of the hunt for the Green River Killer.
I can bring a unique perspective to your hunt for the River Man.
Bruce Greenwood as Detective Kibble and Cary Elwes as Ted Bundy. The River Man, tonight at 8, 7 Central, only on A&E.
She's the one, the chosen.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Give a small child a knife, and the poor tyke is likely to chop off a finger. But in the hands of a master chef, that knife is a tool for creating a sumptuous feast. It's the same thing with money. Give money to poor people, and they'll probably squander it on foolish indulgences like aluminum siding or medicine or food. But if you put money in our hands, in the hands of people who have been around money all our lives, we're going to build empires and buy elections and develop weapon systems and suppress dissent and spread the blessing that is the essence of what America is all about. Unbridled corporate freedom all over the world. I'm Zena Fobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Kick up the billionaires!
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Welcome back.
When you attend the funeral, it is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you.
Tom Lehrer?
And you may have thought it tragic not to mention other adjectives to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go.
I was wondering where he was going with that. 25 minutes past the hour. That's, you know, from the nuclear age, yes. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to call in and be on the program. Bert in Colorado's on the line. Hey, Bert, what's up?
Hi, I'm just calling about the lady that called earlier today saying that there's a call for an investigation of Carrie's medals.
Yeah, I was. She was quoting The Age. The article that I had was in the Independent in Great Britain, but I haven't seen it in an American newspaper yet. But
this is another diversion from the important facts.
Of course.
Anybody with any experience in the military can tell you that the odds are the signatures at the bottom of the certificate that accompany the award were either pre-printed or signed by an auto pen. And if a secretary is saying he doesn't remember signing it, he's probably telling you the truth.
Yeah, well, if actually, though, he's the secretary now. Back then, he was just a commanding officer. So that in that case, it would have been signed by hand. It would have actually been signed.
Well, no, the only signature that would have been on the certificate probably would have been Zumwalt's.
Yeah,
secretary's signatures that accompany those awards tend to be pre-printed.
Yeah.
They're much like, it's much like the Secretary of the Treasury.
Oh, it's like a form letter from your senator.
That he doesn't remember which dollar bill he signed.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and you know, and there were, I mean, we had what a couple hundred thousand troops over there in Vietnam at the time, and they were and they were passing out Purple Hearts. It's for him to say I don't remember, and for that to be viewed as an indictment is nuts. It's nuts. It's crazy. Yeah.
I prefer to see us devote our time on addressing the issues, like the Social Security issues and the other issues that were raised at the convention last week. I'd like to know where the money's going to come from to fund all these promises.
Yeah. Well, it's this is the fundamental problem, Bert. This is the real problem that the conservatives are facing right now, and that is that they have come out of this philosophical base that Ayn Rand articulated so well in Atlas Shrugged, that but you know, goes all the way back to feudal times. That it's better to let the feudal lords run things than for government to run things. It's better to let the corporations run things than for government to run things. And you could argue back in the days of kingdoms, when governments were despotic and neurotic and prone to violence, that there was some truth to that. But in a government of we the people, in a democracy, it's supposed to be a little different. It's supposed to be that, you know, the government acts on behalf of us, that it holds the commons in common with us, that we are the government. And then when we talk about trashing the government, when we talk trash about the government, we're talking trash about ourselves. We're talking trash about democracy. And the conservatives have had this run for a few decades where they've gotten very prominent on being the outsiders. Ronald Reagan, even when he ran for re-election, ran as an outsider. George Bush is running for re-election as an outsider, talking about all the things he's going to do if he gets elected, as if he hadn't just finished, you know, 3.5 years. And ultimately, if he does get elected, and if the Republicans do hold the House and Senate, they're going to have to figure out what they're going to do with this incredible mess he's made. From the mess in Iraq to the $500 billion deficits to the $7 trillion debts to the $350 billion trade deficit. I mean, they have made an absolute disaster. And, you know, when Reagan and Bush did this, Bill Clinton cleaned it up. And I don't think there's time to wait another 4 years before it gets cleaned up. I mean, this is going to have to be cleaned up in the next administration one way or another.
I would hate to see a going out of business sign hung up in Washington.
Yeah, well, that's not going to happen, Bert, but it could get pretty messy between now and then. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A two-month-long strike by oil workers in Norway, the world's third largest oil exporter, has been answered with a lockout. The Norwegian Shipowners Association announced the lockout on Thursday of last week. The Norwegian Shipowners Association announced the lockout on Thursday of last week, and it involves three drilling rigs, one production ship, and eight drilling stations. About 200 members of the Norwegian Federation of Oil Workers Union have been on strike in a labor dispute seeking job security with the Norwegian State Oil Company. Work stoppage caused by the lockout will result in 700 workers laid off and about 30,000 barrels a day lost. The Norwegian government has the power to end the dispute at any time, but has said it is not yet ready to intervene.
During his presidential nomination speech, George Bush briefly outlined his plans to create jobs and improve America's struggling economy. He proposed additional funding for job training programs and making his tax cuts permanent. Secretary of Labor Elaine Chao attended the Republican National Convention.
Well, union membership is declining. Organized labor now comprise about 12.8% of the workforce. Union members comprise only 8.2% of the private sector workforce. So the labor movement has a number of issues that they need to be concerned about.
Chao is part of an administration that opposes the Employee Free Choice Act, which would eliminate many of the barriers to union organizing. She also supported recent cuts to overtime protections and favors allowing states to opt out of any federal minimum wage increase.
360 workers locked out of a titanium plant in Niles, Ohio for more than 10 months have rejected another contract proposal. Workers at the plant, represented by the United Steelworkers of America, were originally locked out when they rejected a proposal by BMI Titanium in October of 2003. At a meeting explaining the vote held in late August, union members said they could not accept the current proposal because it did not afford basic protections the workers need to provide for their families. The five-year contract provided no raises for the workers for the first 3 years.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Progressive Government Institute, Elaine Chao is the most conservative Secretary of Labor of the last half century. Ms. Chao has gone on record against the UN, overtime pay, and ergonomic regulations. She also canceled OSHA health and safety training grants to 19 nonprofit organizations and halted the publication of monthly mass layoff reports. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you.
Lock up your husband.
Uh-oh. 27 minutes before the hour. Welcome back to our program. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. Happy Labor Day to you. The day declared in by President Grover Cleveland in an unsuccessful bid to run for re-election in 1894 after he had brutally suppressed the American Railroad Union strike, put Eugene Debs in prison that came out of the 1892 strike at the Pullman Company in Pullman, Illinois. And Labor Day declared as the day that people would remember the sacrifices of labor, and laborers across the United States would stand side by side, shoulder to shoulder. Here we are, Labor Day. How much about labor are you hearing on radio, seen on television? It's is it in the newspapers anymore? You know, we have the business section. We have business news. I get Marketplace even on public radio. But labor news? When I was a kid, there was labor news. There was, you know, we have labor news on this program, WINS, the Workers Independent News Service. But, you know, by and large, in the mainstream media, they're just, ain't no labor news here. Well, there is. It's just not getting out. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Rich, in Chicago, Illinois, on the line. Hey, Rich, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm great, but I'll get better.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I tell you, I really appreciate your voice on the radio. I listen to conservative radio in my car, and then I listen to the more liberal in at home on my computer, and I thank God I've got both sides to listen to. So
yeah, I agree.
Thank you.
I agree. I would not want to see conservative radio go away. I just think that there needs to be balance.
Absolutely. You can't fly with just one wing.
Yep.
You know, you have to have both sides. But anyway, you know, I've been noticing lately sorry, I'm a little choked up, but I'm glad to be talking to you here. The president has high resolve, and he believes in everything that he's talking about, and people respect that. But I've never seen people blindly following somebody who's been wrong on so many issues. It's confusing to me. It reminds me of when John Gotti was running, you know, the mafia, that if you lived in his neighborhood, you were kind of protected, and it was okay. But, you know, remember Gotti's neighbor hit his kid, and the guy just kind of disappeared, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, but people, it doesn't matter whether the guy's right or wrong. It's like the bigger crime that you can perpetrate, the more you're respected by some of these people. It reminds me a little bit of the American Motorcycle Association had this thing about the one percenters, that the people that cause the most problem.
Right.
And they're respected, and they had a special patch that they wore. I almost think that some of these people in the government should wear their one percenter patch for doing the most harm to society.
You know, it's interesting. It's the same with doctors. They say 1% of doctors account for over 80% of all lawsuits,
exactly.
For example. You know,
crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It is. It's a strange time that we're living through here, Rich. And one of the myths that I find fascinating, I have, you know, I've several times now on the program, I've started to go through them. For a few weeks, a month or so ago, we were just doing, you know, one every day. But I've got a list here. In fact, right in my fingers here, right in my hands, of Bush flip-flops. You know, there's this myth that Bush believes what he's saying. Well, with regard to Social Security surplus, he said, don't touch it. Then he said, we're going after it. Patients' right to sue. He said they should have the right. Then he said they shouldn't. Then he said they should.
Absolutely.
Tobacco buyout. He said we shouldn't do it. Then we should. North Korea. We shouldn't negotiate with them. Then we should. Abortion. He actually once was on the side of abortion choice. He's opposed to it now. OPEC. He says he's going to force OPEC to have lower prices. Then he says, no, we got to let the free market decide. Iraq funding. He says we're not going to need any more money. It'll pay for itself. Then he says, oh, we need more money. Then he says we don't need more money. Then he says we do need more money. Then he says, you know, he's gone back and forth on that one seven times now. Condoleezza Rice's testimony, his willingness to let her testify before Congress. He says, no, she shouldn't testify as a matter of principle. And then he decides, well, I guess it's not a matter of principle.
Same thing with Dick Cheney, too.
Yeah, yeah. And
it's,
on
it's
science, I mean, you know, and that's only number 9 on the list. I got a list of 29 here. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. He is not a man of conviction. He is a man.
He appears to be, and people feed into it. It's like a little kid watching Barney on TV. When they hear the music, they just kind of look at it and dribble down their chin, and they believe it. You know,
yeah.
Right or wrong. I have one other comment too, because
sure.
I do listen to Air America and some of the other programs that are out there, and I notice this kind of resentment. The left, when they look or notice something being done wrong on the right, they kind of make fun of it, you know. And I think that's what makes people on the right resent it so much, because they want to act as if this is so serious, you shouldn't be making fun of it. But the people on the left are saying, look at what you're doing is so destructive, it's a joke, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And there's this kind of polarization in that on how people, where they're viewing it from.
Well, that happens on both sides. I mean, you know, Rush Limbaugh is very good at ridiculing what he perceives to be the foibles of the left. I'm not gonna fault my peers for making jokes about or Jon Stewart or whatever for making jokes about the folks on the right. I tend to to just, you know, stick more to the issues. Of course, I don't have, you know, five joke writers working for me.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Like,
No, but all I'm saying is that the people from the right that look at it and say, no, this is really serious, I think they get turned off by, they close their ears off to even listening to the opposing side because they think they're making light of the issues.
But, you know, I would say, Rich, yes and no. I think anybody who's not going to listen to humor is not going to listen to serious discussion either.
I agree. I need the humor. And, but I also need to hear your voice out there, too. You make me proud to be an American, and I really appreciate this program being on.
Well,
that's
thank
all
you,
I
Rich.
Wanted to say today.
Okay,
thank
thanks.
You.
Great to hear from you, and thanks for listening to us there in Chicago. 21 minutes before the hour, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Ellen in Humboldt County, California. Must be listening on KGOE there, eh?
Right.
Hey, Ellen. Welcome to the program.
I wish you were on the 3 hours here. You're only on two.
Well, you know, one day maybe. Who knows?
I appreciate it anyway.
We're very grateful for the 2 hours. I don't make programming decisions for our stations.
I realize that. I was born in the 1920. Well, actually, 1927. I remember the early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And things were not nice then.
Yeah.
And then when FDR came in, even though he was a millionaire, he helped the people.
Yeah.
And wages became important, and they gradually went up. A dollar an hour back then was really something.
Mm-hmm.
And even a dollar a day, some cases.
Yeah. But a loaf of bread back then was 4 or 5 cents, right?
Right.
Yeah. So a dollar was really worth a dollar.
Right.
You could say.
And I remember my cousin walking around in the snow with before FDR with his feet wrapped with sheets.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked 40 years at a responsible job, retired. My husband had a responsible job, retired. He is deceased now. And here I sit, like most of the older Americans. I may or may not lose my home. I have a better income than most that are on Social Security. I have $1,100 a month to live on.
Mm.
Now, the increase in the Medicare, by the time I get my medications, the end of the year, I will have used at least 1 month's salary to pay for what I have to have to get my meds and everything.
Yeah.
And I resent this.
Yeah, up until Reagan came along, and of course, you know, prior to Franklin Roosevelt, there was this notion that, you know, people are on their own, we don't have a social contract. But Roosevelt raised this issue, and he wasn't the first Roosevelt to raise it. Teddy Roosevelt really actually first raised it. He brought the phrase living wage into the lexicon. But Franklin Roosevelt successfully actually, you know, had a legislative agenda that was based on the assumption that if people play by the rules, if they just do what we as society ask them to do, put in a 40-hour week or a 45 or 50 or whatever it may have been at the time, put in a full week's work, work as hard as you can to the best of your ability, and this is not in the Karl Marx sense at all, although the cons would like to spin it that way, but, you know, you play by the rules, put in, you know, work hard, and we'll organize society in such a way that if you work hard, you're going to get an appropriate compensation that will allow you to put your kids through school, that will allow you to take care of your family, that will allow you to take care of your medical needs, and that will provide for a retirement. And there was an absolute consensus in America about that, and there still is to a large extent. And the Republican Party has completely abandoned that, and large chunks of the Democratic Party have abandoned that. And I am just so hopeful, and I actually am what I'm seeing right now. One of the things that gives me so much hope is that as the conservatives are actually able to get their agenda advanced, it's causing people to wake up and realize what their agenda really is, which is reversing the New Deal, basically, because they think that's socialism and it's terrible and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Well,
and
it meant that all people could live and have a life.
Yeah.
Reagan, when he was governor of California, first thing he did was start on the deregulation.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't want unions.
Yeah, and
look where we are today.
Yep, and he took apart the university system, the University of California system, you know, before Reagan came in. Pretty much anybody could go to college.
I have a young neighbor that just graduated from Berkeley, the University of California at Berkeley, with a high honor roll degree, and he cannot find a job.
Yeah, and he's probably in debt because it used to be free, and it's not anymore. That's why Thomas Jefferson created the University of Virginia as a free university, because he believed that free education was the key to democracy.
His family is poorer. I mean, they're the average poor person. And when I hear the quote of the average wage in this country, like $43,000 or $63,000, whatever, it makes me want to barf.
Yeah, yeah, it's 43. It would be 60 if wages had kept up with productivity since Reagan the way that they had from the 1930s to the till 1980. But, you know, they haven't. So.
I often wonder why people don't stand up and yell to get rid of NAFTA, GATT, and the FTA, because these things are what has done this to us.
Yeah.
And yes, I agree. They need to impeach this administration. That little boy that is sitting there as president is a bully to me.
Yeah. Well, Ellen, you make a great point that it's time for us to stand up and yell. In fact, in honor of your mentioning that, and thank you for the call, I'm going to just very quickly share with us all, share with everybody, Howard Beale from
Network.
You
guys say, I'm a human being.
Here we go.
My life has value.
Thank you.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Ah, there you go. Good on you, Howard. I can't remember. Howard Beale, Network 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Let's see. Steve in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Steve, what's up? Steve, don't listen to your radio. Or if you are. Yeah, okay, there you go.
Yeah, Steve Walden here from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Yeah, hi, Steve.
How you doing?
I'm great. Hey, what's up?
I heard a lot of my friends from Grand Rapids call in today, and I just have a question, if you can, just in a paragraph or two.
Sure.
What would John Kerry do as president to increase my wages, make my job and financial situation better? That's just what I want to know.
Yeah, well, see, here's the problem, Steve. If Kerry really and truly is the most liberal senator in the United States Senate, which of course isn't true, but he is very liberal, then he should be saying and he should be talking about these issues in a head-on basis. But his campaign, for some reason, has been trying to suck up to so-called swing voters, people in the middle, and therefore they've been dancing around this stuff. He should be advancing aggressively an agenda to repeal Taft-Hartley, the 1947 Taft-Hartley legislation that put a crimp on the ability of unions to organize, and all of the laws and regulations that Reagan, Bush, Clinton, and now George W. have put into place that prevent workers from organizing, so that we can get back to some level of rationality in the United States, and start reinforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act, and pull us out of NAFTA and GATT, and take us back to where we were pre-86 or 96 rather, and start selectively enforcing tariffs to bring industries back to the United States. Now he believes that, and I believe that he actually agrees with all those opinions. And if you look at his history in voting, I would suggest that there's a good chance he agrees with all of those. But he believes, or at least his campaign believes, that if he says that, it's political suicide. Franklin Roosevelt, 1932, when he ran for president, and he really helped put this country back together. This was 2 years after the Depression started. Ran for president on a very milquetoast campaign. You know, he didn't talk about the things he was going to do. He Herbert Hoover was saying the economy's turning the corner. He was running for re-election, of course. And Roosevelt got elected, and he transformed America. And my prayer, and I may be wrong, but I suspect I'm not. I really do, Steve. My prayer is that John Kerry, even if he thinks he has to play to the middle, which I think is a mistake, but let's say he has to do that in order to get elected, if he becomes president of the United States, that he will then pursue those very rational policies which brought us the middle class in the 1940s, 1950s, 1960s, 1970s, and that we can return to. We know how to do it. It's not rocket science. It's right there. So that would be my answer. Now, he's, you know, if you look on his website, you will find some johnkerry.com. You will find a lot of statements that suggest those things. But
as far as coming right out and saying anything, I guess I haven't listened to him as much as you have, maybe. But we're really going on what we hope he'll do, not really because of blatant statements that he's made that he will do.
Well, he's what he has said. Actually, I I'm not here to speak on behalf of John Kerry. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not working on his campaign. I'm not but what he has said is that he's going to for example, I mean, in his campaign ads that I've seen on TV, he says that he's going to stop the tax loopholes that encourage, that actually reward corporations moving their production facilities offshore, and he's going to close up those loopholes, and he's going to use any money that comes out of closing those loopholes to actually incentivize corporations to reopen American facilities or to cover the cost of moving their businesses back to the United States. That I think is a great start. He's also talking about incorporating labor and environmental standards into NAFTA and into GATT, into our international multilateral treaties. That is a great start. It's going to make it harder. It's going to raise the cost of labor outside the United States. And as the price of oil and importing things starts going up, American labor is going to start looking appealing again. I think he needs to go a lot farther. But I can tell you, no matter what, he's going to do an awful lot more than George Bush will do. So, it's just a very simple bottom line. Steve, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Tom Hartman with you 10 minutes before the hour.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies. On September 17th, I'll be broadcasting live on WTKG AM 1230 in Grand Rapids at the Celebration Cinema, noon to 3 p.m. at the corner of Knapp and East Beltline. Drop by early at 11 a.m. in the Wave Room for a get-together, then listen to the show. At 4 p.m. after the show, I'll be at Schuller Bookstore on 28th Street for a book signing. For more information, call 616-776-5541. That's 616-776-5541.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Economics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Economics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
A magnetic compass is the oldest and sometimes most important piece of navigational equipment on board most ships. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Alan Gurney begins his new book, Compass, with the story of a brand new yacht on its maiden voyage in 1998. The luxurious boat bristled with computerized navigational equipment, but Gurney says the electronic systems went dead the first night at sea and there was no magnetic compass on board.
So there they were, stuck on this high-tech yacht with this great array of screens and batteries and keyboards, all like a James Bond movie. And they didn't know where the hell they were sailing.
Gurney, a former yacht designer himself, says the boat eventually made it back to port, but he says the wayward yacht's experience underscores our continued dependence on this simple device. Gurney traces the history of the compass from its first documented use in the year 1187. He says the device was so valued that sailors in the 1500s had a hand pinned to the mast with a dagger if they were caught messing with it, usually a magnetized needle in a bowl of water. Gurney says as vital as the compass was, it had its limits. The Earth's magnetic poles do not lie directly under its geographic poles, a phenomenon known as magnetic variation.
The needle points north, but it's not to true north, of course. It's to magnetic north. And it was, took centuries before people realized that magnetic north changes. And also, if you're sailing up in the high latitudes in the Arctic and you're getting closer to the north magnetic pole, the pull of the magnetic field tends to make the needle very skittish.
The problem of magnetic variation was solved in the 18th century with the help of the astronomer Edmund Halley. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
I was making my way through the wasteland. The road into town passes through. I was changing the radio station with my mind on you.
Oh, and welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, busy day here, Labor Day, happy Labor Day to you. Only, what do we have here, 57 days to regime change. Keep your fingers crossed here in the United States of America. 1-866-889-8894, Billy in Santa Fe, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Billy, what's up?
Hey, Tom, nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you happened to catch Amy Goodman going at it with John Fund on C-SPAN yesterday.
No, I did not.
Well, it was interesting, the general topic of whether the media is reporting the truth or not, and you know, not giving enough time to the dissent that was going on in New York City and so forth. And
yeah,
it was just... It's amazing to watch this guy because he's such a classic stooge for the right. I mean, it's almost as if there must be a school that they send these guys to learn these tactics.
There actually is. I mean, they have the think tanks out of Washington, D.C., the Heritage Foundation is probably the most well-known of them, but the Republican National Committee has these things where whenever anybody gets elected to an office or takes a position where they're going to be a spokesperson, there's classes, there's training, there's regular emailings, there's conference calls, there's meetings. They do actually educate their people. They train them.
Well,
and they stay on message.
They're just amazing to watch because they're just like automatons. I mean, it's almost like they're certain cues, and they go right into they spin things right off into a brick wall.
Yeah, yeah, it's absolutely remarkable. Billy, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Chris in Santa Fe. Hey, Chris, we got about a half a minute left here. What's up?
Just really, really fast, Tom. You know, I just finished reading your book, What Would Jefferson Do?
Uh-huh. I need you to speak up, Chris.
I really, really liked it, and it just occurred to me what Jefferson would do is he would start planning for if these guys steal the election, we got to start planning for impeachment.
Yeah, well, and that will not happen if the Democrats don't take either the House or the Senate, which is why it's so important that we not just pay attention to the presidential election.
Absolutely, Tom. That was the last point. It's like everybody's got to vote for their local congressman.
That's right, and at the local level, at the county level, at the state level, and at the national level too, as well. Absolutely right, Chris. Thank you very much for the call, and you know, well, good point, well made. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Today, Labor Day, 57 days to regime change, 1,099 days since 9/11.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
A two-month-long strike by oil workers in Norway, the world's third-largest oil exporter, has been answered with a lockout. The Norwegian Shipowners Association announced the lockout on Thursday of last week. The Norwegian Shipowners Association announced the lockout on Thursday of last week, and it involves 3 drilling rigs, 1 production ship, and 8 drilling stations. About 200 members of the Norwegian Federation of Oil Workers Union have been on strike in a labor dispute seeking job security with the Norwegian State Oil Company. Work stoppage caused by the lockout will result in 700 workers laid off and about 30,000 barrels a day lost. The Norwegian government has the power to end the dispute at any time, but has said it is not yet ready to intervene.
During his presidential nomination speech, George Bush briefly outlined his plans to create jobs and improve America's struggling economy. He proposed additional funding for job training programs and making his tax cuts permanent. Secretary of Labor Elaine Chao attended the Republican National Convention.
Well, union membership is declining. Organized labor now comprise about 12.8% of the workforce. Union members comprise only 8.2% of the private sector workforce. So the labor movement has a number of issues that they need to be concerned about.
Chao is part of an administration that opposes the Employee Free Choice Act, which would eliminate many of the barriers to union organizing. She also supported recent cuts to overtime protections and favors allowing states to opt out of any federal minimum wage increase.
360 workers locked out of a titanium plant in Niles, Ohio for more than 10 months have rejected another contract proposal. Workers at the plant, represented by the United Steelworkers of America, were originally locked out when they rejected a proposal by BMI Titanium in October of 2003. At a meeting explaining the vote held in late August, union members said they could not accept the current proposal because it did not afford basic protections the workers need to provide for their families. The 5-year contract provided no raises for the workers for the first 3 years.
Here's today's Dow Bob report. According to the Progressive Government Institute, Elaine Chao is the most conservative Secretary of Labor of the last half century. Ms. Chao has gone on record against the UN, overtime pay, and ergonomic regulations. She also canceled OSHA health and safety training grants to 19 nonprofit organizations and halted the publication of monthly mass layoff reports. You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
My husband went to school part-time. He's got a bachelor's degree in computer science. So far, no job. And it's been 3.5 years. The computer science industry was downsizing, sending jobs overseas. George Bush said Americans need to retrain. My God, how many times do we have to retrain? Why not bring these jobs back home? I voted for George Bush. I feel very betrayed.
MoveOnPack is responsible for the content of this advertisement.
Labor Day is all about our country's long striving toward the ideal of egalitarianism, which really is the big idea of America itself. The idea that we might create a society based on the democratic values of economic fairness, social justice, equal opportunity for all. The practical expression of this ideal is in the creation of the middle class, an economic haven from laissez-faire greed, allowing the great majority of workaday folks to pursue happiness without the vicissitudes of oppressive poverty. But a middle-class possibility is not a given in our country, for the forces of greed are constantly pushing to eliminate it. We only have a middle class because our parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents fought, bled, and died to create the framework that allows people to climb up. It's a framework composed of wage and hour laws, minimum wage, Social Security, public education, affordable housing, Medicare, the GI Bill, Head Start, and so many more elements. Yet this is the very framework now being so rapidly and gleefully dismantled by Washington and Wall Street, knocking down millions of working families and cutting off middle-class opportunities for young people. Even though ours is the richest economy in the world, every day in America, 85,444 workers lose their jobs. 14.7 million Americans are jobless, underemployed, or have given up looking for work. 43.6 million are without any health coverage. Every day, 12,878 workers are injured, made ill, or die from their jobs. 6.8 million Americans are at work, but live in poverty because of the low wage of their jobs. This is Jim Hightower saying, America today is in another of those when in the course of human events moments that Jefferson wrote about in 1776. It's time for all of us to fight anew for our middle class framework and to recommit to America's historic egalitarian ideals.
My name is James, and I want to tell you how a friend of mine changed my life. After my wife passed away, I found myself spending more and more time alone. I kept up with the daily business of living, but didn't get out as much. Didn't see friends as much. That's when I met a new friend, Sassy. Let me tell you about her. First of all, she can perform miracles. She's only a year old, weighs only 9 pounds, but she can jump up 5 times her own height. But the most impressive miracle is what a difference she's made in my life. She's my cat. I named her Sassy because I had a cat named Sassy when I was a little boy. I shared everything with that cat. What I've realized is that it doesn't matter if you're 8 or 80. We all need friends. I found my best friend, Sassy, at the ASPCA.
This is Richard Thompson, member of the board of directors of the ASPCA, encouraging you to visit your local animal shelter and adopt a cat.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Happy Labor Day. 1884, Grover Cleveland wanted to run for re-election. In 1882, 2 years earlier, he had busted up a strike, the Pullman Company, Pullman, Illinois. The town of Pullman, Illinois had been built by George Pullman and to build railroad cars. And he had modest little homes for the workers and a little nicer but still modest Victorian homes for the middle management and senior management. And then he had this baronial mansonial, like a mansion hotel in which he lived, George Pullman and his family and visitors and friends and things. And things were going pretty good. This was the early 1880s until the Great Depression, as it were. It's been often referred to, the Great Depression of 1893, and created quite a problem for George Pullman, and he was unable to what he did was because the demand for Pullman cars went down, he cut everybody's wages. But see, everybody who lived in the town was their rent was automatically deducted from their paychecks because they were living in housing that he owned. And he kept the rents where they were, even though he reduced wages. So people didn't like that. Organized strikes. It spread nationwide. This was 1893. I'd said 80s. The 1880s. It's 1890s. Excuse me. 1893. And what he did was because the demand for Pullman cars went down, he cut everybody's wages. But see, everybody who lived in the town was their rent was automatically deducted from their paychecks because they were living in housing that he owned. And he kept the rents where they were, even though he reduced wages. So people didn't like that. Organized strikes. It spread nationwide. This was 1893. I'd said 80s. The 1880s. It's 1890s. Excuse me. 1893. And the American Railway Union, which was headed up by Eugene V. Debs, boycotted trains carrying Pullman cars. This led Grover Cleveland, the president of the United States at the time, to send 12,000 troops into the Chicago area to put down a strike in Kensington near Chicago. They killed two people. Thousands of people were injured, wounded, shot at. Finally, on August 3rd, 1894, the strike was declared over, and Debs went to prison. And the Pullman employees, in order to get their jobs back, signed that was done. He was trying to get the labor vote. He didn't get it. He lost. By the way, he lost the election. And there we go. Labor Day, the day that we remember American laborers and the conditions. And the conditions are rather startling. As Jim Hightower points out, every day 85,444 Americans lose their jobs. Right now we have 4.17 million people who are unemployed in the United States who want jobs, who are actively seeking jobs. 43.6 million people who have no health care. Every single day, 12,878 people are injured or killed on the job. And 6.8 million of us are working full-time and living in poverty. So we've got a lot of work to do. Anyhow, Tom Hartman here with you. It's and on this Labor Day, 57 days to regime change. Our telephone number, 1-866. One of those newfangled toll-free numbers, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call in, be on the program, if you have thoughts on this issue. Our website, tomhartman.com, you can click on the live chat. It'll drop into the chat room there on the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, which is full of folks, interesting conversations. In the last hour, we had a conversation. Somebody called and said, well, what's John Kerry going to do about this? I had a few points to make, but somebody pointed out there's a 263-page book that John Kerry has put on the website that's also published called His Plan for America. And the folks in the chat room correcting me, you know, saying, well, you know, he does have a plan. He's very explicit. There's a lot of details. And I agree. They're absolutely right. The problem in my mind, the problem is that it has not been boiled down to 6 or 8 or 10 one-sentence sound bites and repeated over and over and over by members of the Democratic Party. And thus, most of America doesn't know, and unless this is done, never will know, that John Kerry has a plan or what his plan is. It really has to get boiled down in a very simple and straightforward fashion. How do we save the middle class in America? Because the middle class is very rapidly becoming the working poor. And it's not a good trend. It is not a healthy trend. Right now, the median income in the United States is around $43,000 a year. Had income, and from the 1930s until Ronald Reagan became president, as worker productivity went up, worker income went up. They tracked each other. Starting when Reagan declared war on labor in the early 1980s, up till today, there has been a shift, a split. If average worker salaries had followed worker productivity, which theoretically wouldn't cost corporate America anything, right? Because the increase in productivity they're getting makes up for the increase in the salary. Of course, then they may not be able to pay some of their CEOs, you know, $200-300 million a year in salaries, but nonetheless, they are in compensation. But nonetheless, if worker productivity and worker salaries, worker income, worker wages had tracked each other since Reagan, just since 1980 to today, the median income in the United States would be $60,000 a year, not $43,000 and change. So, and now we see these new unemployment numbers coming out. The a couple days ago, 108,000 new service-providing jobs, 140,000 jobs altogether, more or less, 144,000. It's under the 150,000, which is necessary every month just to keep up with the growth of the labor market. But the really interesting thing, if you dig a little bit deeper into these things, the really interesting thing is that roughly two-thirds of all those jobs that were created in August were governments hiring people, the government hiring people, 69,000 people, 63.9% of the 180,000 total net new service-providing jobs. So the other thing that's interesting is that in August, self-employed part-time rose 128,000. In the last 2 months, it's gone up 303,000 people. Now, you have to ask yourself, the president's running around bragging about the fact that there's 303,000 just in the last 2 months new jobs created, which fall into the category of self-employed part-time. That means if I go door-to-door and say, I'll mow your lawn for $10, and I do it on weekends because I'm working a job during the... I'm self-employed part-time. I actually get counted twice. This is not how you build a strong economy. In fact, 44,000, there's been an increase of 44,000 people in the category of part-time self-employed farmers. You know, figure that one out. Well, gee, I think I'll get a cow and milk it. I mean, you know, part-time self-employed, part-time farmers? Went up 44,000 people, a 27% annual increase. Just like the part-time self-employed in general, a 20% annual increase. And yet our media keeps repeating the essential untruth of this administration, the Republican Party, and even many Democrats, that these numbers indicate that there's a strong economy. The economy is strong and getting strong. No, this is a very weak economy. And it's a direct result of conservative economic policies promulgated by George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George Herbert Walker Bush, and Ronald Reagan. Very straightforward. I mean, you can just track it back. The loss of good union jobs, insane trade policies. It's unmistakable. 1-866. Let's go back. Let's go to the phones. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Alan in Touro, Iowa. Is it, Alan?
Yeah.
Hey, Alan. What's up?
I remember in that movie, I, Claudius.
I never saw it. Sorry.
Can you hear me? Okay.
Yeah, I can. I just didn't see the movie.
Okay. It's a long movie about the Roman Empire.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like the Emperor Caligula.
Caligula.
He thought he was Zeus.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kind of comparing Caligula with Bush.
Yeah. Well, it was a little spooky when Bush went to the Mennonites in Pennsylvania there a few weeks ago and said that he believes that God speaks through him. He said, quote, God speaks through me, and end quote. I've been saying I hope that when he said me, he meant M-E as in the postal code for the state of Maine. Like, you know, Maine is Kennebunkport. It's God's country. God speaks through, the state of Maine or something like that. But, it's interesting some of the parallels. We had Gary Hart on the program a few weeks ago, Senator Gary Hart, and he was talking about how the Romans, when they made the transition from being a republic to being an empire, when they started focusing so much of their attention on basically controlling nations outside of their own boundaries, that led to their downfall. And I think you could say the same thing probably about the Soviet Union, although many of their assumptions were also flawed, economic and political. But the fundamental point of it was that the Romans became an empire because they ran out of wood. They deforested Italy. And so they had to attack the rest of Europe because they needed fuel. They had so little wood because they had these Roman baths and things, you know, and they were smelting metals and things. They had so little wood that the price of silver went through the roof. There was the government was almost brought down by a currency crisis because they couldn't afford to smelt silver because of the cost of wood, and so they went off in search of fuel, and that's what we're doing right now in Iraq and the Middle East. Is we're going off in search of fuel, and it just seems a more sane way to avoid empire and stay with being a republic is to be self-sufficient energy-wise.
Well, that goes back to what Carter was trying to make us energy insufficient.
Energy independent.
Independence, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, this is exactly, I mean, Jimmy Carter predicted this. Jimmy Carter was in the 1970s, he was telling us that this was coming, and that if we didn't do something, if we didn't, you know, start wearing sweaters in the winter and turning our thermostats down, insulating our houses and making a rapid transition from a fossil fuel economy to a renewable economy, that we were going to be, that our children, he was telling us in the 1970s, that our children would be fighting wars over oil. And guess what? Yeah, here we are. And Alan, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. And thank you for listening there in Iowa. And not only do we have the wars for oil, but we have an administration that doesn't see that as a problem. In fact, they're proud of it. They're bragging about it. They're going to do more of it. This is a very dangerous time for the United States and the world. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates block out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. It's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
You're listening to The Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back.
My life so boring.
24 and a half minutes past the hour.
I have been to the extreme.
A day in the life of Joe Republican. And I normally don't read things on that. This is fascinating. Jim Turr forwarded this to me from BlueCanyonProductions.com. Jim, one of the great satirists, musicians, and all-around creative geniuses of our era. He didn't write it, however, and he wasn't sure where it came from, or at least he didn't note that here. So I can't define the attribution, you know, who wrote this. I don't know. Perhaps somebody in the chat room will let me know if they know right off the top of their head, but we'll find. I'm sure somebody will let me know, and I can give credit, but... Joe gets up at 6 in the morning every morning to prepare his coffee. He fills his coffee pot full of good, clean drinking water because some liberal fought for minimum water quality standards. He takes his daily medication with his first swallow of coffee. His medications are safe to take because some liberal fought to ensure their safety and that they work as advertised. All but $10 of Joe's medication are paid for by his employer's medical plan because some liberal union workers fought their employers for paid medical insurance. Now Joe gets it too, even though he's not a union guy, because his employer needs to offer competitive benefits to hire the best people. Joe, keep in mind, is our Republican. Joe prepares his morning breakfast, bacon and eggs this day. Joe's bacon is safe to eat because some liberal fought for laws to regulate the meatpacking industry. Joe takes his morning shower, reaching for his shampoo. His bottle is properly labeled with every ingredient and the amount of its contents because some liberal fought for his right to know what he was putting on his body and how much it contained. Joe dresses, walks outside, takes a deep breath. The air he breathes is clean because some tree-hugging liberal fought for laws to stop industries from polluting our air. Joe drives to work in one of the safest cars in the world because some liberal fought to raise safety standards and emission controls. Joe begins his workday. He has a good job with good pay, medical benefits, retirement, paid holidays, and vacation because some liberal union members fought and died for these working standards. Joe's employer pays these standards because Joe's employer doesn't want his employees to call the union. If Joe is hurt on the job or becomes unemployed, he'll get a workers' compensation or unemployment check because some liberal didn't think he should lose his home because of his temporary misfortune. It's noontime. Joe needs to go to the bank to deposit some of his deposit his paycheck and pay some bills. Joe's deposit is federally insured by the FSLIC up to $100,000 because some liberal wanted to protect Joe's money from greedy, unscrupulous bankers like the ones who ruined the banking system before the Depression. Joe needs to pay his Fannie Mae underwritten mortgage and his below-market federal student loan because some liberal decided that Joe and the government would be better off if he had a decent house and was educated and earned more money over his lifetime. Actually, we'd all be better off. He'll pay more in taxes, if nothing else. Joe is home from work. He plans to visit his father that evening at his farm in the country. He arrives at his boyhood home. He was the third generation to live in a house financed by the Farmers Home Administration because bankers didn't want to make rural loans. The house didn't have electricity until some big government liberal stuck his nose in where it didn't belong and demanded rural electrification. Those rural Republicans might otherwise still be sitting in the dark. He is happy to see his dad, who's now retired. His dad lives on Social Security and his union pension because some liberal made sure he could take care of himself so Joe wouldn't have to. After his visit with Dad, he gets back in his car for the ride home, turns on a radio talk show. The host keeps saying that liberals are bad and conservatives are good. He doesn't tell Joe that his beloved Republicans have fought against every protection and benefit Joe enjoys throughout his day. Joe agrees, saying to himself as he's driving home, "We don't need those big government liberals ruining our lives. After all, I'm a self-made man who believes everyone should take care of themselves just like I have." It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
A killer murders over 50 prostitutes.
What do we got? Another body!
To catch him, you need the help of a killer.
It's a plane ticket. We're going to Florida.
For what?
Ted Bundy.
Tune into A&E tonight at 8 for the original movie, The River Man. The true story of the hunt for the Green River Killer.
I can bring a unique perspective to your hunt for the River Man.
Bruce Greenwood as Detective Kevo and Cary Elwes as Ted Bundy. The River Man. Tonight at 8, 7 Central. Only on A&E.
She's the one. The chosen.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner. On Wednesday, one Labor Day event overshadowed all others in the media when Stephen Cassidy, president of the Uniformed Firefighters Association, Local 94, surprised organized labor by endorsing George W. Bush for re-election. The International Association of Firefighters, a separate and larger organization, was one of the first unions to endorse his challenger, John Kerry. 60,000 members of the IAFF in 19 states do not have the right to collectively bargain. Kerry is supporting a bill that would give them this right. Bush opposes it.
I hear these politicians on the Republican side of the fence running around the country giving speeches, talking about the heroes of New York, you know, who ran up those stairs to give their lives so that other people might be able to live. But they don't honor those people other than in words.
Peter Gorman, president of the Uniformed Fire Officers Association of New York City, says his members are voting for Kerry because of his co-sponsorship of the original Fire Act legislation.
From fiscal year 2004 to 2005, George W. Bush is proposing to cut $800 million nationwide on Homeland Security.
Kerry has also vowed to employ 100,000 new firefighters and is a co-sponsor of the Staffing for Adequate Fire and Response legislation.
Since 1990, there's been 800,000 additional citizens in the city of New York, and that's U.S. Government Census Bureau statistics. The facts don't lie. They had no right to close those firehouses. We're doing more with less every day.
Despite repeated phone calls, the UFA declined to comment.
A 10-year lawsuit over the closing of a McDonnell Douglas plant in Tulsa, Oklahoma, came to an end on Thursday. The federal judge presiding over the case approved an agreement ordering the company to pay former employees $8.1 million in back wages. After attorney fees, the more than 1,000 former workers at the military aircraft plant who filed the suit will each receive about $5,800 each. Last year, the workers agreed to settle disputes over pension and health care benefits for $36 million. The issue of back pay remained unresolved after the company appealed. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to the Work Zone Safety Clearinghouse, work zone-related fatalities dropped substantially last year. In 2003, there were 1,028 work zone deaths nationwide as compared to 2002, when there was 1,186. Texas holds the record for most deaths over the last 2 years with a combined total of 358. Georgia is the most improved, going from 118 fatalities in 2002 and dropping to 24 in 2003.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
is the Tom Hartman Program.
Come together.
We're discussing eschatology, if I'm pronouncing it right, in the chat room. You know, you got a bunch of smart people in there when they're using words I don't know the meaning of. The philosophy of the end of all things, apparently. The current administration subscribing to it. You can get to our chat room, by the way. Go to TomHartman.com. However you spell it, it'll take you there. And click on live chat. And that'll take you over to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe, and then click on the Tom Hartman program link over on the left-hand side, and boom, it'll pop open a chat window, and you'll be in there in real time with a whole bunch of folks, and sometimes all over the world. We've had people in there from the Middle East. Occasionally, Joe, former producer of this program, who now lives in Korea, shows up. Folks in Australia, all over Europe, but mostly folks in the United States, listening to the program. Anyhow, let's get into the rest of the news. Some of the things happening in the news. There's some really remarkable stories out there. Some reporters over this weekend got a little bit of a surprise. They were on their way to cover a George Bush event, and you know they got off their plane or whatever, got in a bus, three buses actually. There was a White House aide with them and a Secret Service agent. I mean, this is the official reporter delegation. And a police car pulls out in front of them with the lights flashing, with the kind of follow me, you know, starts moving along. And they think, hey, this is cool, you know, cut right through the traffic like the hot knife through butter. And they follow this police car for a couple of miles. And some of the reporters in the bus who know the area in Broadview Heights, Ohio, are saying, wait a minute. We're not going where the president's speaking. We're going someplace else. What's up? And they find themselves in the parking lot of a church a little more than a half a mile away from where the president's speaking. And the police car pulls in, the three buses pull up, and doors open, and everybody gets out. And they go over to the police, and they say, what's up? And the cops say, well, this here is the free speech zone. This is where you can be during the presidential speech. And they say, But we're reporters. We're supposed to hear the president. And the cops are going, oh, no, we didn't. They had been instructed, apparently by the Secret Service, although nobody's taking credit for it. But the police have been instructed to direct folks. Well, here's the AFP story. This off the Yahoo News Service. Surprised to hear whom they were dealing with. The police claimed that they had been ordered to divert all buses not clearly aligned with the Bush campaign to the parking lot. Sources familiar with the conversation said. Campaign aides denied any role in shunting protesters to the site, insisting that local law enforcement handled such matters, not the Secret Service charged with the safety of the president. However, crowds at Bush events are carefully screened, with tickets issued primarily to campaign aides and loyal Republicans, and anyone suspected of being a heckler being kept out. So the White House press corps taken on a merry ride. Well, of course, as soon as they figured out that they weren't anti-Bush or even neutral. See, if you're just curious, if you show up at a Bush event and say, no, I'm not a Republican, I'm just curious, I'd like to hear my president speak, I'd like to hear what he has to say, I'm still trying to make up my mind, they won't let you in. No, you got to sign this loyalty oath here. It says we can use your name in the newspaper. Let's see your membership card in the Republican National Committee, the RNC. You got to prove that you're a registered Republican and that you've given money to the party by becoming a member. Let's see it, and then maybe we'll give you a ticket. And if you want to ask a question of the president at these Ask the President gigs, you get to submit it in advance, and it seems that at least a third of them aren't even questions. There are people standing up going, "Oh, Mr. President, I'm so happy with what you're doing." Well, the protesters in New York were not happy. 550 of them were apparently illegally detained for at least 2.5 days. It wasn't until George Bush got up to give his speech, his keynote speech, that the police in New York finally started letting out protesters, some of whom had been sitting in these without seeing a lawyer, without a hearing, without any sort of due process for 2.5 days. State law in New York requires that you at least have it's not called a hearing, what are they, an arraignment within 24 hours, that you know what crime you're charged with and that the judge decide whether or not you should be released or set bail. I mean, it's like it's in the Constitution, folks. It's right there. It's the Sixth Amendment, as I recall. Let me find it here. Article 6, Article 7, yeah, and Article 8. Article 8, in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, that's the hearing, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense, the Sixth Amendment. The Seventh Amendment, in the case of in suits of common law where a value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined by any court in the United States than according to the rules of the common law. The Seventh Amendment. The Eighth Amendment, excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. And the state of New York has interpreted that as within 24 hours they got to tell you what they're doing. And it took a state Supreme Court judge to finally tell the New York City Police Department, listen, what you guys are doing to these protesters, many of whom, by the way, were not protesters, is a crime itself. The police themselves behaving criminally in New York City. Yeah, we were there. We saw some of it. We saw a die-in that Tuesday night that we were there, Monday night or Tuesday night that we were there, and saw a bunch of people get arrested. Altogether, 1,700 people were arrested, and including the manager of a theater who was coming out of a subway station with a friend on their way to celebrate his birthday. Two women who had been shopping. I mean, these are the people who were finally let out of what they call Guantanamo by the Hudson. Had nothing to do with the anti-Bush demonstrations. But that didn't stop the police. I got to say, you know, most of the cops that we saw when we were there seemed, you know, like decent people with reasonably positive dispositions. But there were a few where, you know, the vibe was just very clearly, you know, one more question and you're on the ground, buddy. Which is, I mean, you know, welcome to the wonderful world of police. I was writing a series of novels about a private detective. I wrote four of these things way back. This was the year of the Olympics. The Olympics came to Atlanta, Georgia. So I think that. Oh, was that 8 years ago or 12 years ago? One or the other. And a friend of mine was a private detective, and I've been following him around to learn about private detective stuff so I could write these books. And he said, hey, the Georgia Police Academy, the first time in its 130-year history, is letting civilians go through the academy to learn, you know, to get a certification so that they can be security for the Olympics in Atlanta because there aren't enough cops. And you want to go. And I said, that would be great. So I have the certificate of graduation from this program within the Georgia Police Academy, one of the very first non-cops to go through it in years, and, you know, 120-year history. And I was sitting there with my friend DeWitt, is his name. He used to be a police chief in a small southern Georgia town, and now he's a private detective. And this was, you know, toward the end of the, it was a couple, 2 or 3 weeks, I don't recall which, the program lasted. And toward the end of it, we're sitting in this dining room in this huge atrium in the Georgia Police Academy, and there's these guys who are going to become state cops, and they're out there marching. I mean, the police are it's a very military culture. And they're marching back and forth in formation. And DeWitt and I were watching it, having lunch, and I said, DeWitt, what do these guys get paid when they get out of here? And he said, you know, I'm not sure. I haven't been in the police business for a lot of years, he said, but I'm guessing it's around. And he threw a number out. I don't remember what it was, but my recollection was that it was something in the neighborhood of around $30,000 a year. And I said, that's incredible. You couldn't pay me $30,000 a year to go out there every single day and risk being shot at. You know, I mean, and I said that, you know, with a certain amount of admiration. And DeWitt chuckles, and he leans over and he says, you kidding? He says, half those guys out there, you give them a club and tell them that they can just beat the bejesus out of anybody anytime they want, they'd pay you. And I got to tell you, having gone through the police academy, I met a few people like that. In fact, I got beat up by one of them. We were doing martial arts training, and I made the mistake of flipping this guy. And so he went down hard, and he came back after me and really, really beat me. But, hurt me. Flipped me hard. And then, you know, laughed about it and told me what a mean guy he was and all this stuff. You see, you meet them. But there also were a lot of very decent people going through that, which, you know, a lot of my stereotypes were busted up. Anyhow, John Kerry. John Kerry looks like he may be facing a bit of a problem campaigning under new rules that the Bush administration has put into place. The U.S. Office of Special Counsel of the Bush administration has just released a guideline saying that under the Hatch Act, which is this law that says that you can't use federal funds to campaign, you know, that in theory would prevent the president from flying on Air Force One to a campaign rally. Of course, you know, what he'll do is he'll toss in a visit with the mayor or something, so it's official business. But anyhow, under the Hatch Act, according to the U.S. Office of Special Counsel, if John Kerry wants to use any federal property, and keep in mind about a third of all the land in the United States is owned by the federal government, and most of it obviously is wilderness. It was acquired during the Great Depression. But, you know, people just didn't walk away from their taxes because they couldn't pay them. But from now on, John Kerry can no longer stand in front of Mount Rushmore. He can't go to the Grand Canyon. He did this a couple weeks ago. John Kerry went to the Grand Canyon a couple weeks ago and did a campaign gig where he was protesting the appalling record, what he described as the appalling record of the Bush administration on funding our national parks. And, you know, all the cutbacks and things like that. Well, you can't do that anymore because that's federal property. He can't use the Statue of Liberty. His trip to NASA headquarters may have been illegal, where he was, you know, they said he was from Woody Allen to Woody Allen. He was in the sperm suit. Remember that? It looked more to me like a bunny rabbit or something. Anyway, all he needed was a cottontail. It was not the best of photo ops. But in any case, they're saying, you know, you can't stand in front of the Lincoln Monument, the Washington Monument, the Jefferson Monument. I wonder if he could even be photographed in front of the United States Capitol. As you might predictably expect, Kerry advisors are a little upset about this. They view it as to quote this news story from Grist Magazine, a deliberate maneuver to gain advantage over John Kerry's presidential campaign, you know, by the Bush administration. And so, let's see how it shakes out. Looks like it's going to be a challenge. The article goes on to note, Bush administration officials can easily contrive excuses to conduct official business on federal property, business which, incidentally, includes the recitation of campaign talking points. So not only can George continue to use all these federal gigs, federal spots, but so can His Secretary of Energy, his Secretary of Environment, his Secretary of Labor, and on and on. And then get up there and they can make the campaign talking points while they're making an official proclamation, as it were. It's time to catch somebody doing something right. You know, it's always better to catch people doing things right than wrong. And so the catching folks doing something right today, Cantor Fitzgerald Securities. Congratulations to Cantor Fitzgerald Securities. If the name sounds familiar to you, it probably is, because Cantor Fitzgerald Securities was the company that was up on one of the top floors of one of the World Trade Center towers, and they lost nearly 700 of their employees on 9/11. They were probably the company that was the single company that was the most hard hit by 9/11. And they have now filed suit, this was last Thursday, in U.S. District Court in Manhattan, against Saudi Arabia and a variety of banks and Islamic charities that they say were knowingly funding Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. This is a $7 billion lawsuit against Saudi Arabia. The charities, they said, were, quote, not independent, end quote, of Saudi Arabia, but rather were, quote, funded, authorized, supervised, directed, and or controlled, end quote, by the government, several Saudi princes, and the Saudi High Commission for Relief. This from the lawsuit. So congratulations, Cantor Fitzgerald, on taking the proverbial bull by the horns, doing something about it. Obviously, the Bush administration, 15 out of the 19 hijackers were Saudis. And what do? We say, oh, the Saudis, the bin Laden family, let's get them out of the country quick. Yeah. Special airlift. Nobody else can fly, but they can. Good on you, Cantor Fitzgerald.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company. What happened when you, Thomas, gave us a plug, the phone started ringing. The first person said, whatever it is that you're selling, I want to buy it. And for the next few hours, the phone rang nonstop. The people who listen to your program are what they call in the business my target audience, people who are conscious and responsible and try to do the right thing and try to think for themselves. I would encourage anyone to advertise on the Thomas Hartmann Show, absolutely, without question, whether that be on the national level or the local level. And you will absolutely get results. The way you can learn more about our imported organically grown wines from France is by calling us. The phone number is 1-888-ECO-WINE, or you can visit our site at www.ecowine.com.
Now, it's time for This Billionaire Moment.
Some are charging that there's a connection between Halliburton being awarded no-bid contracts in Iraq and the fact that Vice President Dick Cheney used to run the company. Of course there's a connection. Would you rather do business with a bunch of strangers who may charge less or with a dear, dear friend who knows what's in your heart? That's why Dick gets $1 million severance check from us at Halliburton every year. It reminds him who his friends are. Friends shouldn't have to compete for contracts. Friends don't need government oversight, and friends know who their friends are. Cronyism sounds like such a bad word. Try friendship instead. A really lucrative friendship. I'm Xenophobe for This Billionaire Moment.
This Billionaire Moment is brought to you by BillionairesForBush.com.
Here come the billionaires!
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a 4-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now, 800-505-1546.
An enormous fire in Yellowstone was a public relations disaster for the National Park Service, but it was business as usual for nature. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The National Park Service enacted a new policy in 1972. It would let wildfires burn unless they threatened unique features or buildings in the parks. For the first 15 years, the strategy worked well, but everything changed in the summer of 1988. Fires swept through drought-stricken Yellowstone National Park, ultimately burning about 36% of the park, almost 800,000 acres. Linda Wallace is the editor of a new book called After the Fires. Wallace says heavy media coverage of the Yellowstone fires missed the mark.
The media, for the most part, is trained to cover what they call disaster stories. And in a disaster story, you have to have a victim. In a natural ecosystem where fire is a natural process, it is a victimless process. So the media ended up making up victims or choosing a victim. Now, there were some people whose houses were burned by the fires, and they are definitely victims. But for the most part, the ecosystem was helped by these fires rather than harmed, and that was a story that didn't come across well.
Wallace says the media described the fires with terms like destruction.
The term destruction is definitely an inappropriate term to apply to natural wildfires in a natural ecosystem. The ecosystem depends upon fire, and when you don't have fire, that is actually more of a destructive process than having a fire burn in a fire-maintained ecosystem.
Wallace says the 1988 fires were not even unique. Studies of sediment layers and other historical evidence revealed past fires of similar size. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nads in Tiananmen Square.
Welcome back.
It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly real.
It's Democracy coming to the United States of America, November 2nd. Time for a regime change. 57 days till regime change. Bob Graham's book is out. This is, here's...
Democracy is coming to the USA.
What a punchline. Anyway, Bob Graham's book is out. Intelligence Matters. Double entendre or pun or whatever. I'm not sure what you would call that. But in any case, Bob Graham's new book. And the Miami Herald apparently got a hold of a copy of it this weekend. It's not like officially out yet. And they got a copy on Saturday and read it. And it's in the Sunday Herald in yesterday's paper, the Miami Herald. And talking about what's in this book, and apparently there's some real explosive stuff, some real blockbusters, as it were, in Bob Graham's book. Keep in mind, Bob Graham was on the Intelligence Committee, the Senate Intelligence Committee, and really played a very, very significant role for a lot of years in the intelligence community in the United States, in oversight of the intelligence community in the United States. He was the guy, right? He was on the Democratic side. He was the guy who was, or one of the guys who was just, you know, Mr. Intelligence, right? Very, very methodical, very detailed, you know, keeping his diaries and all this stuff. Anyhow, he said that that two of the Saudis, keep in mind, 15 of the 19 hijackers were from Saudi Arabia. None of them were from Iraq, of course, or had anything to do with Iraq. But two of these Saudis had a support network in the United States that included agents of the Saudi government, says Bob Graham in his book, according to the Frank Davies in the Miami Herald, that at least two of them, that was well documented. The Saudi government was supporting these guys.
And that when Congress tried to look into this, Bob Graham being part of Congress, they tried to investigate it. I quote, "The Bush administration and the FBI blocked a congressional investigation into that relationship." Bob Graham says the discovery of the financial backing of the two hijackers would draw a direct line between the terrorists and the government of Saudi Arabia and triggered an attempted cover-up by the Bush administration. Maybe Michael Moore was right. Who knows? Anyhow, it's the end of a beautiful Labor Day here. I hope you're having a wonderful day. Best to you and your family. Thanks to Ira for engineering our program today, to Louise for producing it, to Shelby for streaming us around the planet, to Mike Toth and to Ben Birch with White Rose Society for keeping our archives up, the folks in our chat room. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, details what is